I'm going to tell you a few stories. All you have to do is listen.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast, the show that leaves you wanting less when Rolf, Luke, and I start discovering shit. I'm Oscar. With me today is indeed
Rolf.
And Luke will be with us in a sense later on. This is episode number 42. What we are a typically a film podcast, a bi-weekly film podcast that takes on new and newish films to review. But this is January, widely considered to be the dump month, as well as the Oscar consideration films are all coming out in theaters. So January is like the best time to release our top 10 shows, which is what we're doing today. This is our top 10 best discoveries of 2017. That's what I'm calling it, the best discoveries of 2017. But it's the top 10 of that. And we'll talk about what that is in a minute. Every show that you'll ever download from us, especially these top 10 shows, have detailed show notes. So if you want to like sneak a peek in advance to see what our top 10 is before we actually talk about them, if you want to spoil yourself the suspense, then by all means, go nuts, because that the show notes are there in advance for you. And as well as on our website at otherpodcast.com, where you can find all the other remaining and last year's top 10 extravaganza countdown shows, not to mention everything we've done in between. And if you hear a kid in the background, we have Rolf's child here, as always. He's like electric sliding all over the place.
He's like our ghost guest host.
Yeah, exactly. He's very cute, though. He sounds cute on the mic. So there will be no what we've been watching lately, our recent stuff we've been seeing. Just one last thing is to mention the bonus episodes that we have. What we do is that every month we highlight one new movie that's in theaters or will come out in theaters in that month, and we will review it. And for those who are, you know, more than willing to donate to this upstart of a podcasting career we're doing here, donate any amount to our show, which, again, you can find at otherpodcast.com, we'll get that bonus episode 5 months in advance. So you'll get it that month, and then otherwise...
We've been pretty good about when it comes out on DVD.
Yeah, we've been pretty good about that, because usually a movie will come out like 3 months later, maybe four, but five is a good number, because it'll be out for sure by then.
For sure by then, yeah.
So,
especially like an indie movie or a lower...
Even indie, big, small, doesn't matter.
Which is weird, because sometimes indies are just released also with like... Yeah, well, sometimes we'll get indies
sometimes,
like...
Sometimes, you're right.
But they will get like a DVD release
right.
Instead of just digital.
Right, exactly. And if, like I said, if you don't, it'll come out to the general public, to everyone's ears, 5 months down the road. This month's new Discovery bonus episode will be The Phantom Thread. Oh, no, Phantom Thread, not The Phantom Thread. I think I always make that mistake. Which is Paul Thomas Anderson's latest film. We're all excited. We all love him. Sure, we've all seen his movies. I think all of us have seen almost all of his movies. And we're a big fan of his, so we're going to see that. We haven't seen a single trailer or nothing. We haven't seen it yet or recorded the episode, but I heard it's amazing. And our current... and the he's in the background yelling. He just wants attention. And our current bonus episode that came out from 5 months ago is Catherine Bigelow's Detroit. Check that out. It's on the website right now for you to enjoy.
Detroit.
One last bit of feedback news. Not feedback. Although we did get some feedback, kind of, about our TV show part one. I'll talk about that next time. Anyway, two more things. One is that we're going to be taking a break. So this is our third out of four countdown episodes, Rolf. Next week will be the big one, which is our top movies of the year. And the reason we hold off so long on the films, you know, because I know how the pop culture Twitter sphere is that if you don't post it at the end of the month, at the end of the year, or at the beginning, right away at the year,
yeah,
it's like nobody cares anymore. Like I don't care what they think. We take our time. And we're not like official, as you can tell by our voices, our unprofessionalism, things like that. We're not really professional critics, so we don't get screeners. We don't get any of that kind of thing. We don't get consideration in advance. We live in Chicago, which is great for movie watching, but it isn't. It's all available as the public can see them. So we wait a little bit so we can catch up to these movies that are like out in LA or have been out in LA or some festival that we couldn't get to. This is why we wait a few extra weeks. And that's when we're coming out next week for our top 10 TV shows of 2017. Movies. Fuck me. So that's next week. This week is Discoveries. And then we're going to be taking like a 3-week break. This is our vacation. And we'll be coming back headstrong with a new film to release. Talk about our new marathon, too. We're going to have that sorted out by then. And we're going to talk about the Oscars, which by then the nominees will be in, I think, as well as the ceremony. We're going to talk about pre-ceremony and post-ceremony stuff. So we're going to jump in full force in 2018 for sure. And like about a month from now. So it's going to be fun. So, Raf, can you help me? Can you tell the audience what is what do we mean when we say this is our top 10 discoveries?
It's always confusing.
It's a little confusing. We have a few rules to it and everything.
There's a couple rules. Not much, but it's there. Discoveries are things that we've ourselves or whatever have discovered. It could be an old movie, old TV show, nothing that came out in the year because that's technically – that should make your top 10 list of anything. And if it didn't, that's tough stuff. Like, you can't...
Right.
We don't want to use this list as a bonus for the stuff that we already did, like a top 10 movies or a top 10 TV shows.
Right.
But we do want to use it as a, oh, look, like, I didn't see that movie that came out 3 years ago that everybody raved about. You're like, that was actually a really good movie. And what's what we want to use this for, this top 10 discoveries for. Like I said, it doesn't have to be movies. It could be life experiences. Mm-hmm. It could be a book. It could be...
Yeah, I left it pretty wide open when we decided to make this.
Yeah, it's cool because it kind of it involves our life. And it doesn't just like the narrower point of view of our lives, which is what we do here for the podcast, which is talk about movies and TV.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more like, oh, look, we get to, you know... do other things, and it's a little bit snippet of our life, and mine is definitely there for my snippet of my life, okay, of what's going on. So, and I'm surprised that Luke's list isn't a snippet of his life.
Oh, you think it would have been?
I think it should have been.
Mine's isn't, other than to say that I'm a nerdy, a movie geek. So,
sure,
it already reflects what my life is.
So. Yeah. But like, you've decided to be your life to like mainly focus around movies and doing things
in this show.
That's cool, right? Exactly. But like, I didn't. You know, like, no, I don't. I like doing all this. Bless you. But bless you.
He really popped that out.
He really popped that out for sure. He waited in between both microphones to make sure he sneezed. I have other things. I love watching movies. This is why I'm part of the podcast. I love watching movies. I love talking about a movie, especially right after a movie. Because I have mixed feelings sometimes, and I want to talk about a movie, and I could hate it walking out. 2 weeks later, I could be like, no, that's a really good movie, or vice versa. And I like that I get to talk about it here and I extrapolate more thoughts on it. I think it's something that most people don't do as often, is just sit down and have a conversation with people.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
Give ideas.
That's how we started this.
Sure. Give ideas and give thoughts to it. Yeah. Well, we would watch movies with our friends and we would get out and we would either go somewhere to eat or somewhere to drink. Or
the whole coffee and pie romance thing.
Or back at our place, right, and hang out. Or somebody's house and hang out. And we'd be talking about the movie and be like, yeah, this is great. And then like, oh, 2 hours passed and we just talked about one movie.
Yeah.
And we're like, we could totally do this. And that's how I did STEM. I obviously like it. Going to the movies is a passion of mine. I like going to the movies.
Me too.
I like watching movies. I like watching movies in theaters more than I do at home, but...
Yeah, but, you know, with Netflix taking over and a lot of streaming sites...
Don't get me wrong. I love being on my couch.
It's too easy being on the couch sometimes.
Sometimes it does feel too easy. But like I said, I digress. The top 10 list, it's just anything for discoveries. It's just anything else. Anything else that you want to add on there. And just kind of, you know, instead of maybe we talked about it during the podcast. Oh, man, I covered some of these movies or whatever. And it's cool. It's cool just to mention these things.
That's true. No, I'm 100% in agreement with you. I love the way you put it. And every year is so different. And also, it's a way for us to highlight things of different years that we can't go back to because, you know, we're a podcast of recent stuff. You know, that's why we do marathons, is to highlight a certain viewpoint, a certain genre, a certain something that doesn't just belong to the year because we don't want to just focus on the year that we're in. Because there's so much history, and I think that discoveries list as well as marathons are a way for us to do that. Do you remember roughly what your list was last year?
You know what? I think I have it in this little notepad. I've been trying to use it.
Oh, really? You've been using the same notepad?
Yeah, I think so. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, I think in my year, I had The Arbor, which is a documentary drama or whatever, biopic.
Yeah, I do. I have a couple books.
Had a lot of comic stuff in here.
I have a couple books, a couple things. Yeah, I had a lot of video games that I didn't play. My number one of last year was Tales from the Borderlands.
That's right. And we were like, yeah, bitch.
Yeah, and I...
You have other, code names on here, too.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I had a lot of... It was a year of comic books for me, and I was
a lot of old movies,
books.
Too, like The Bridge on the River Kwai.
Right, Dial M for Murder.
On the Waterfront. Those are good films.
Right, yeah. I did a lot of cool stuff, yeah. There's some music on there, too.
So
yeah.
I've been saving the Divinity still. I still haven't seen it, so that might make my next year's.
Oh, read it?
I still haven't read it, yeah.
You haven't read any of them?
No, I've only read the first one that you gave me.
Bro.
I know, I will read them, but I just like... I've been holding off
on comic
books.
Slap
comic
you.
Books and anime are the ones that kind of fell off by the wayside.
By the way, our discoveries are our most flexible list.
Definitely. Definitely.
So we kind of cheat sometimes. My number 10 is a big cheat.
Okay.
So just letting you guys know. Like,
for sure.
And I mention it because I'll talk about it when I come to my top 10.
Yeah, well.
But yeah. Like I said, it's a more flexible list.
So, and Luke is obviously off, seaside, west side, somewhere. He's somewhere. And I think we mentioned some show where he is. I forget. California, I think.
That was an honor for Luke.
Florida. Anyway, he's out working, but I told him to send me his discoveries if he has them. He sent me five. He sent me his top five, and he sent me in a different file. What I'm going to do, Ralph, you know how we always take a break after our 10 to 6?
And the break is going to be his top five?
In the break, I'm going to put his top five in a row, because I first thought, because I told Ralph, like, Ralph, if you don't have a whole 10 for discoveries, I understand. Luke can send me five. You can send me five. I can put my 10 in between you guys. But I don't have to do that now because, Ralph, you have a full 10. Yeah. So I figured...
I never have an issue for top 10 discoveries.
I figured we'll just put like 20 minutes of Luke in the middle.
Right. Yeah.
And
I've always had an issue for top 10 TV because I tend to
because
watch...
Because it's harder to watch more content.
Yeah, it's hard to watch more TV. And like I said, I'm very picky.
Yeah.
You will give like half a season a go and that'll be like a TV show for you. But for me, it's... I need to finish a show or get really, really close to finishing a show.
Right. No, I understand.
Yeah, so I'm very...
And all the ones I picked that made my top 10, I made sure that there were things I finished.
Sure, sure. Makes sense, yeah.
Imagine. Someone coming towards you. Who wants to kill you. Regardless of consequences.
A madman?
Yes. But he knows it. And you don't. And just to kill you isn't enough for him.
But how would he frighten
me? Stay there, Miff. You just tried.
But I can't imagine what you've thought of.
Imagine... This would be one of his weapons.
That?
Yes. That.
Anyway, without further ado, and all that pomp and circumstance and all that explanation, hopefully you're still with us, by the way, let us get on with our top 10 discoveries of 2017. I think you started off last time on the TV, so...
I did.
I will start off this time.
No. What? No.
Nope.
I will take this because...
Oh, shit.
You're going to start it off on movies.
Oh, okay. Why do you want to... Wait.
Because you don't get to have last go on movies.
No, that's how I have
you're
it set up.
On purpose. I know you're having it set up that way. That's why I'm making you not have it.
Bish.
But if you want to, go ahead.
No. We'll make Luke last now, just because we're both arguing about it. Because he's going to send me his top 10 movies.
Yeah, but Luke's last is going to be so underwhelming.
Probably. It'll probably be your name.
Oh, my God. It's underwhelming. Like, I'm just messing
with you. Well, yeah, I mean, it's fine.
It's a good movie.
We're making fun of you, Luke. Okay, fine. I'll start off. Wait, you're starting off.
No, you start off.
Okay, you want me to start?
You can have last one. Yeah, you'll have last go on.
No, I don't have to. I mean, I was kidding. I'm not planning it that way. Yeah. But I will start
but
now that we're
was planning it that
this
way.
This is the best conversation I've ever had. Let me find this thing.
Okay,
I just had.
I have mine, so you're good.
Okay, fine. You go first.
All right. So my number 10 is a podcast, and it's technically a rediscovered podcast for me because I used to listen to podcasts back in the day, guys, before people even knew what podcasts were.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like I'm talking about. Like, I used to. This is high school, like 2006. For me, okay?
God, can you imagine if we started podcasting then?
Yeah.
We would have a solid fan base.
So, of course we would. But so, the reason I bring it up is because this guy started around then too, and he did a podcast, and he did a, now he does a video thing, and he's one of the biggest podcasters out there. If not, I would say the biggest podcast out there. And that guy is Joe Rogan. This is the Joe Rogan Podcast Experience, or the Joe Rogan Experience. I used to listen to him back when he came out. Why? Because I've always liked Joe Rogan as a comedian. I liked him in this TV stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now I love him because he's the host for UFC, and he does the MMA stuff. He does talk about that stuff, right? He's not the host, but you know what I mean. He's one of the announcer guys. And really, really cool. He has the gigantic Joe Rogan experience, who has transformed so many people. He has millions of listeners per millions of listeners and viewers because he does a YouTube, he does a live YouTube thing, mm-hmm. and it's up to watch whenever. And he does the podcast, obviously. And most people listen to podcasts. But it's a great thing. He brings up whatever interests him, and he has conversations with people, and I love it. And they're 3 hours, 3 hour long episodes. They're crazy. Like, this guy is bonkers.
Yeah.
He's on like 1,060 right now or something episodes in.
Oh, really? Damn.
Well, he's been since 2006.
No, that makes sense. 52 a year or whatever.
Well, he does a lot a year. Like, in a week, he does like three or four. That's his life. This is his livelihood.
Yeah.
Like, he does this for whatever. He has like 10 minutes of commercials, of promos he does in the beginning.
That's right.
Anyways, and it's great because this podcast has been helping me through work. It's a really cool podcast because there's not one thing. He talks about MMA. He talks about hunting, what he likes to do. He talks about just getting into politics of certain things. Only things that he's into, like whatever. Not into, but like he's interested in, right? He talks to people, marathon runners, everything. His list is extraordinary, who he talks to. Cool. And it's a really cool podcast to listen to. And I recommend that podcast to anybody because it's all walks of life podcast. And if anything, what the one thing he does a lot is, even though he's a pothead and he's a comedian, he's really funny, and he's always very talking jokes about himself or bringing himself, not down, but bringing him, what's it called, making light of himself.
Mm-hmm.
What I think he's really good at motivating people. He's good at motivating and keeping people like up. I think his podcast has helped me out a lot throughout this year, just of trying to get myself motivated to do things. And that's actually like really, really good for me. I've thought so anyway.
No, hey, I listened to just one episode. I don't know him very well. I know nothing about him. I know he's the gigantic, but by the way, your number 10 is basically our competition. It's just funny to think about. Anyway,
yes, nobody, sure.
I know what you mean. Yeah. And obviously we're potatoes compared to him. I listened to one episode, which you recommended, an episode with him and Dan Carlin, who is one of my favorite podcasters.
Yeah, sure.
And I think when we did this in the old show,
yeah.
Dan Carlin, when I first started, he made my top 10 discoveries, I think.
Yeah.
Because I love his history stuff.
Right.
Hardcore history. And he was a guest host in one of his episodes, and I heard it, and it was amazing. And
it was an amazing podcast, yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, I listened to it, and I was like, this is an amazing podcast just for anybody.
I still haven't listened to any more episodes, but sure. I really like that
but one. But it's really hard. It's really daunting to get into those epics. I call them epic podcasts because they're 3 hour long.
Right.
Minimum.
I got back into Harmontown this last year after skipping like a year and a half. And it was daunting to get back into that because he is nonstop also.
Right, exactly.
But I got up pretty fast.
Yeah. So. No, I like it. I like his hosts. I like you, whatever. I don't know. It's a really cool podcast for me to listen to. To rediscover, like I said, it's a kind of a cheat for me. But did stop. I have listened throughout the years very randomly, sporadically.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been hardcore. Like, I'm talking about, I haven't missed an episode since.
Nice.
And that's hard to do. Like,
it is hard to do.
Especially when the guy releases three, four a week.
I listen to one podcast network with these two guys who do like a lot of work.
Yeah. And I love the people he brings on because I get to like, oh, wow, that's a cool musician. Oh, wow, this is a cool thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's your number 10, Joe Rogan podcast?
The Joe Rogan Experience. Yeah.
Joe Rogan Experience. Yeah. Okay, cool. My number 10 is a book that's related to my top 10 TV shows, which is Neil Gaiman's American Gods. When I first heard about the show that was going to come out, I purposely wanted to read the book in advance. And I read it about a month before the show started premiering, and in audiobook format, by the way. So I listened to the book. I know a lot of people are really butthurt when I say, I read a book in its audio format, and they're like, you didn't actually read it. Well, like, I took in the information. How else can you say it?
Well, I mean, lately that's how I've been reading my books, because I work and listen.
You still get the information. I don't understand what's the difference. So whatever. People get butthurt about that. I don't know why. But American Gods is my number 10, and in one way, way different than the show. I'm not comparing it exactly. In another way, it's a fascinating, originally, and also kind of a quirky commentary of American life told in a fantasy setting because of, the premise is that this guy named Shadow is, get out of prison. Or he's about to get out of prison, gets out of prison, and then he gets out of prison earlier, by a few days earlier, because his wife, who was ready and waiting for him, had died cheating on him with his best friend in a car accident or something like that. And he meets someone in an airport, this guy named Mr. Wednesday, very aloof, weird old guy who has like strange powers to say. Powers are persuasion, things like that. He's a very charmer. And he starts going on this adventure with him to do only what he asks to do. Like he is like a hit. He's like a, not him, and he's a bodyguard to him in a way, or like a servant in another way, a butler in a way, his driver mainly. And from there, you start getting a cast of these characters that are essentially the physical, literal embodiment of gods that either have been forgotten or that belong to cultures that are not yours. And as we progress through the story, you realize that there is a war going between the old gods of yesteryear, from like, you know, the Greek gods, for example, and things like that. Like Easter, in a way, is an old god too, to the new gods, which we consider what would be today, which is like television would be a god because of how much attention we pay to that. That becomes a god, or money, or government, or security, or whatever. And it's all told through the perspective primarily of Shadow and his wife a little bit too, because the wife comes back from the dead. It's really good. It's a really, no, it's in the beginning. Ish, like first act. And it's a really interesting thing. And I know that Neil Gaiman has been around for a long time. He's done so many comic books. I know he reinvented the Sandman next Spider-Man comic book. I know that. I've heard of it, I'm saying. I never really knew him that well. I've read Anansi Boys a long time ago. Love that book. Read it like 3 times. Great short book you can read. This has the same power and feel to it, except a little heavier. And I love the subject matter, and it's a really great book. I really liked it a lot. So American Gods, my number 10. Raph, what is your number 9?
My number 9 is it's a weird one.
So far, so good, then.
Yeah. So my number 9 is a life experience. And nice. It is teaching potty training.
Ooh, nice. Oh, I love this. So I already love your top 10.
I bring it up because I've delved into at least 3 different books. I started 2, didn't finish them, and then I read one. I read one that intrigued me, and I ended up reading the whole thing. And it was just a really good book to read. And I've tried tips and tricks from people that, you know, from my parents and her and my wife's parents, and helps and that might
That's
help.
True.
And
everyone interested. Has a different.
Everybody has their own experiences. And I read this book, and I was like, I told everybody, go F yourselves. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go buy this book, right? I'm going to treat it like the Holy Bible. I'm going to go for it, right? I read this book, and I'd love to tell you the name of the book. I have it on my Kindle, but I'm too lazy to pull it up. And it's a 3-day intensive course to teach my son how to potty train,
right.
How to be potty trained. And it fucking worked. Like
gangbusters?
Like in 3 days. And it was like a week before he started school, or 2 weeks before he started school. And
right.
This kid was going to the bathroom on his own.
Nice.
I have never given the most positive reinforcement in my life ever in a span of 72 hours. I'm talking about like my life was, you need to be positive at all moments of, like, I had smiles everywhere. I was given lollipops, high fives, chips.
Fist bumps.
Everything. I'm talking about everything. Nice. Good job, buddy. Nice going, champ. Like, all of these, like, everything. It was the most positive reinforcement environment ever. My kid had his bladder full the whole time. It was great. It was a great thing to do. And my wife ended up taking, like, one of the days off, so she was there for 2 of these off. My apologies. So she was there for 2 out of the 3 days, and I had 3 days off, and I just crash course. She never left my side. You want some juice? Sure, have some juice.
Yeah.
You want some milk? Have some milk. You got to go potty? Oh, remember, if you got to go potty, go this. It was crazy. And it was a really cool thing. And it was actually kind of brings you closer to your kid also, because you get this intensive time with him.
Yeah.
Not really, you're just like, oh, well, let me do my thing. I got to do stuff around the house. I got to do this.
Yeah.
No, like you just spend all the time like, you want to read a book? Let's read a book. Right. You want to do this? Let's do this. You know, stay away from watching TV because he gets too comfortable, piss everywhere.
Right.
Like, and it was really cool thing to do. And I was glad that I read this book. And I had almost everything ready. And it was just, we had tried potty training like when he was 2 years old. Ended up doing when he was 3, almost 4.
Nice.
It was really cool. It was really well.
That is really cool. I was here for a little bit when you tell me some of the results, and that was interesting to see it from
my parents. I told my parents that I was going to do this, and my parents were like, okay, like, come on, like, I have 3 kids, like, you're not going to do this, right? And I was like, sure.
And I still don't know how to use the potty.
3 days, exactly, right? No, I miss all the time. 3 days later, and then my mom was like, dude, like, he goes to the bathroom and he has to go to the bathroom. Like, he slipped up very rare.
Yeah,
and, right. Like, it was just perfect. And now he's on it.
Like, he's on that shit, yeah. He knows the feeling. Feeling means going there.
Right, exactly. Oh, no, he doesn't even have a feeling. He, like, he's dancing. I gotta go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Better open the door.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
That's good. That's a interesting number. It's funny that it's wonderful that you picked that as on his list. And also, like, you're saying that eight other things trump this life experience?
Yeah.
That's just funny to think about. Just
was that a life experience? I mean,
I'm just messing with
you. Sure.
I'm just putting you in the spot.
For me, it's like, I'm discovering potty training.
Right.
Like, oh, I have life experiences. This is great. Sure.
Kid number two is going to be, like, easy.
In theory.
Right.
Yeah. I put it up here because I discovered some pretty cool shit this year. Like,
literally, pretty cool shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's number nine. What do you call that? Potty training?
Just potty training.
When you write me, when you send me your list, by the way, send it to me how you want me to write it on the show notes because I wouldn't know. I could just write potty training, but I don't know if you want me to say, like, teaching my son how to potty train or the whole thing or whatever.
Potty training.
Or whatever. I'm just saying, send it to me how you want me to say it to people.
Yeah.
So that's your number nine. Yeah. Interesting. Very cool. Definitely more interesting than my number nine, which is a film from South Korea called The Wailing. Have you seen it?
No.
Heard of it?
I've heard of a wailing wall, but this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I wanted you to say something. I also want to stop you from drinking twice in a row. So I'm going to read a description here. A stranger arrives in a little village, and soon after a mysterious sickness starts spreading, a policeman is drawn into the incident and is forced to solve the mystery in order to save his daughter. And this is a film written and directed by Na Hong-jin, and it stars some pretty good actors, some like Kwok. Sorry.
That name's made up.
Nope, it's not made up. I just want to fuck it up. Jun Kunimura.
Or you just can't help yourself.
Youngmin Hwang. I'm trying my best here. Woo Hee Chun or Chun? Chun? No, right, that's white. It's Chun, probably. Anyway, this is a horror film. Mystery, I would say, also, because a lot of it is steeped in mystery before, like, you even know what's going on. And it's a film that came, it's in Netflix. It's on Netflix right now. I think it premiered in the States as a Netflix film, so it might be original here in that way, but it's made over there. And it's an interesting movie because it's a long movie, though. It's like two and change. But what starts off as a regular cop procedural that has a supernatural tinge element about, like, what's making these people crazy that they kill their entire families, people with no background of violence, kill their entire families in such a way, and then leave bloody remains of, like, false memories in the wake, you know? Like, it's even more than just that. It talks about, like, the undercurrents of, like, what makes people in general going for that tendency, and the way it marries that with some of the comedic elements of the main cop, who is a bumbling idiot that is forced to be the hero in a way where he doesn't really succeed, but he actually starts trying, probably for the first time in his life, because he's kind of just been walking through life.
Okay.
His child is more responsible than he is, and she's like 8 years old. And it goes from there, and it goes to a place where, like, it's like Killing of a Sacred Deer, kind of a recent movie we watched, Ralph,
sure.
Where, like, it gets progressively worse for the family. So it gets worse. So, like, it's going to get fucking daunting, and it will get more horrifying for sure. And there is some visual imagery in this movie from the demon, the guy that turns to eating human flesh in the woods nearby, to, like, the little girl, the way she says a few lines, to the remains of a house after a murder spree, like, not even the violence itself, but, like, the remains after, is very striking and very cool in a horrifying kind of
way.
So I recommend it for those reasons. One of my favorite horror movies that came out that I missed out for 2016's list.
Okay.
So when I saw it in 2017, I put it on my thing, and it made my list. Okay. So that's The Wailing, and you can find that on Netflix right now, guys, if you're interested. And there is no English dub. It's have to be subtitled, so read subtitles. So that's my number nine. And what is your number eight?
Yeah, so I'm going to quickly say something before my number eight.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make me feel bad for where I put my things on my top 10 discoveries, okay? Like, just don't.
See, now you want me to double down now.
No.
Okay.
No. But at the same time, like, listen, guys. It was a.
I know.
I'm just saying.
Okay. Yeah.
Don't make me feel bad. All right. So my number 8 is a show that came out in 2015. No, it came out 2016.
Okay.
Yeah, 2016. And I always see. This is the problem. This is where it was going to be in my top 10 shows, but it didn't make it because technically I only saw the first season, not the second season. The second season came out this year, and I thought the first season came out this last year in 2017. But I was wrong, and it's The Magicians. I ended up watching The Magicians, and
very nice.
So yeah, so very nice. I haven't seen the second season yet. I actually just started it recently. But I thought it came out this year, on 2017, and the second season started coming out like late 2017 into 2018. But I was stuck in the weird Netflix curse of things come out late in Netflix, not when they come out.
Right.
I was just incorrect about the dates, and I had to add in my top 10 list of shows because it was supposed to be on there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, The Magicians, it's a really cool show. It's a sci-fi show, right?
Yeah.
And it's the first, like, it's funny how like the first episode or two are really like, oh, like, okay, like we could do so many cool things and this and
really,
that.
Really standard also, like surprisingly, yeah. Like, okay. It gets cool so far, but...
Like, yeah, yeah. And then, like, the first half of the season, like, 3 or 4 episodes, you're like, oh, it's, whatever, it's not that horror. But it fucking just...
It hits you.
I like that they try to stick to a main character, but not really. Mm-hmm. In the end, like, everybody's as important.
Yeah.
And I really like where it's going. I really like how certain things are happening and how magic sort of works. And you could tell, like, they have a lot of things planned for this show.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, I really like the show.
I really wish I would have made my honorable mentions in my TV shows. This. Yeah. And I did discover it technically in 2017, but I wanted to, because I also caught up to it, so I didn't want to include it.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Right, so it was in another realm for me, but I'm so glad that we're talking about it now.
Yeah, I don't know, there's something about the show, because it's...
No, I'll tell you what it is that they nail endings. This show nails cliffhangers, like in a weekly way. On a weekly basis, the best that I've seen in anything new recently. Like, they nail every ending in a way where it could be bingeable, but also could not be if you don't want it. But it leaves you wanting just exactly a right amount of more. But not in a way where, like, oh, it's just continuing the story, like a movie. You know how all TV shows feel like a movie now?
Sure.
It's not like that either, because it's serialized in a way. Yeah. Not serialized in a way, but it's serialized enough.
I would say, though, like, I do have a lot of problems with the show still. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I do hate like one specific character line.
Line?
You know, one specific character's like
story?
Story arc.
Is it the main guys?
No.
Who is it?
It's his supposed best friend.
I need more information.
It is the
I've seen season 2, so friends kind of changed.
Julia Wicker. Julia.
Oh, the blonde. Is that the blonde?
No,
the one that failed the school.
That failed the entrance school.
You hate her, okay.
I can't stand her story arc.
You saw the whole first season only?
I started watching the second season recently.
So you don't like her story still?
No, I still think it's... I just don't like her.
With that trickster guy?
I like what they did with her. Actually, I did like the stuff that happened.
Do you know the trickster guy?
Yeah, I do know the trickster guy.
I think that's badass.
I think that's badass. I just hate her in it.
I hear you. No, she's...
She's the worst part of it.
I understand. Yeah. She was annoying for me. For me, the other one, the blonde, was annoying at some point.
It was, too.
But they do a good thing about her.
What I liked about her is that she stuck true to her character.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was, like, really cool. Not saying that this girl doesn't stick true to her character either, but at the same time, she...
She's all over the place, though.
That's the problem. She's just a hot mess.
Yeah.
And, like, it's a hot mess, and, like, and then she acts like she's, like, the dumbest person at the same... She's, like, the smartest but dumbest person...
Yeah,
there.
It's like the smartest person that makes the worst decisions or something.
Right, but she's not learning anything. That's the problem. It's like you see in comparison to Quentin, our main character, like he fucks up and he learns, and then you see the character learn. And I'm like, okay, that's awesome. This person's not. That's not that. She's
maybe,
not evolving.
Maybe that becomes a part of something.
She's not evolving, but maybe it does. And if it does, like, it's not paying off yet so far.
Anyway, it's not like a spoiler for you. But that is interesting. One thing that this movie, the show nails, I think, is also the world building.
Yeah, that's a big thing. World building is really good. Yeah.
So, it's also a sci-fi show, right? Is it a sci-fi?
It's a sci-fi show? Yeah.
It's really surprisingly good out of sci-fi. So that's your number. What is it? 8.
8.
Yes. The Magicians, which is you can catch up to it on Netflix. They have the first.
Netflix
two seasons.
So it did come out in 2015. It was a 2015 to 2016 show.
Yeah, because they probably crossed in between.
Yeah, they crossed in between, yeah.
Right.
So they just looked at IMDb and said,
I might get the season pass on iTunes for season 3.
Oh, that'd be awesome,
man. I haven't decided yet, because if Netflix is going to have it at the end of the year,
so I
might just wait.
I think when I get a new TV this year,
yeah,
I'm going to buy one of those 4K HDR Apple TVs.
Nice. Yeah. Jelly.
You should be.
Jelly donut. All right. my number 8 now. Is a movie. This is an oldie. It's from 1960.
Oldie but goodie.
Oldie but goodie. I've always heard about this movie, but never seen it. It's one of those big blind spots in my cinephile career. It's Peeping Tom. Have you heard of this movie?
I've heard of the term.
The term, right? I don't know what came first. I think the movie might have come first, but I don't think so. Probably the term first.
Maybe.
But Peeping Tom is a movie from 1960. Let me read a description. It's a little bit of a long one, but it does highlight everything I kind of want to talk about.
He's a Peeping Tom.
Yeah, but it's way worse. As a boy, Mark Lewis was subjected to bizarre experiments by his scientist father, who wanted to study and record the effects of fear on the nervous system. Now grown up, both of his parents dead, Mark works by day as a focus puller for a London movie studio. He moonlights by taking girly pictures above a newsagent's shop. But Mark has also taken up a horrifying hobby. He murders women while using a movie camera to film their dying expressions of terror. One evening, Mark meets and befriends Helen Stevens, a young woman who rents one of the rooms in his house. Does Helen represent some kind of possible redemption for Mark, or is she unknowingly running the risk of becoming one of his victims? And this is directed by Michael Powell, the half of the Powell and Pressburger duo that ruled England's amazing cinematic decade of the 50s and 60s, where, you know, they did Black Narcissus, they did The Red Shoes, which is an amazing fucking movie, and The Life and Times of Colonel Blimp, I forget the whole title. They've done some great movies, and I've never seen his standalone movie here, and this movie stars Karl-Heinz Baum. Jesus, that's Mark Lewis. Anna Massey, Maura Shearer. Maura Shearer is amazing. Maxine Audley. And this is a serial killer movie, but it's more like he's a spree killer. Like it's all within the 2 weeks of his life or whatever of the last we're getting. And it's a serial killer that's very philosophical. It's surprisingly open. Like you could tell, like, a lot of the templates that we now get to know, the David Fincher times, is very different. And you could tell they're starting off in a lot of ways. So I like the boldness of what they're trying to do and what they succeed in doing. And some of the stuff is genuinely horrifying, because the lead up, how this guy tries to get that expression of complete fear documented in his camera, is so specific, and the lead up to it works better than the actual murder. Because you find yourself, like, kind of scared, like the girls are.
Really? Do you?
Yeah, I do. Because, I mean, obviously, it's 1960s. It doesn't look like today. Obviously, I'm not going to say it's dated, because it's just different. But, like, if you let yourself hear what he's saying and in the context of what's going on in the scene, like, you can see yourself, like, dude, this is fuck. Where are you going with this? Like, you can see the going from confusion to what are you talking about to, like, oh, that's what you're talking about. Oh, shit. And then death.
Really?
Yeah, it's really cool. That's and the guy looks fucking creepy as hell, too. He can be creepy. He looks like, when he's not creepy, he looks like a harmless guy in the background, but he can be really creepy. So he's a good actor. Bomb.
He's Luke.
He's Luke, basically. Okay. And so what
we're going to insert references for Luke all the time, because we know he doesn't listen to the episodes.
Right.
So this is a perfect time.
So if he bitches at us, we'll know he listens to the show, which means he cares.
Which means he cares.
But he won't listen, so we're fine. Right. We can make fun of him. We should talk about Social Security number right now. So anyway. Wow. So the way he kills, like, he holds a camera on a tripod. He has the camera up to their face, and he has, like, this spear that comes out of the tripod thing. And he stabs them as he's filming them in the same motion. And that's how he's able to capture this perfect thing going on. And the movie opens with him killing a prostitute. And it's like, it's very, you know, gringy and dirty for a studio film from England. But it works out somehow. And it's a very creepy, strange film that goes past the Peeping Tom voyeur aspect. It isn't just Peeping Tom. It's like Peeping Tom Extreme. But it's good. It's a good movie. It's a surprisingly good movie. So that's my second horror movie, I guess, in a row. Peeping Tom from 1960. You can find that, I don't know, somewhere, I'm sure. I didn't find it on any streaming site. I found it on Mubi.com, but it's already gone. So, yeah, find it somewhere. Peeping Tom. That's my number. What is that, number 8? Yes, number 8. What's your number 7?
My number 7 is a comic book.
Nice.
By Image Comics that I ended up getting through my Humble Bundle. It is called Birthright. It came out in 2014. And I read the first of 2 volumes, and it's actually really cool. I'll read you this a little bit long description of what happens in the beginning. The story starts with Aaron Rhodes and his son Mikey, who are playing catch while Brennan and his mother Wendy are busy preparing a surprise birthday party. With the sudden disappearance of Mikey in the woods, a case of a missing person is filed. A year later, a full-grown man from another world appears. He claims to be Mikey, or Michael Rhodes, who ventured into another world, where time goes faster, obviously, by a portal in the forest he got lost in. Being on a quest with his family, things are not what they seem to be, as more and more of Mikey's secrets, time in the other worlds gets lifted. It's a really cool thing. It's kind of like every kid's dream, who's like into like, what's it called, a fantasy, who like, oh man, I wish I could just be in this world, or whatever. It's basically what happens. Like, a portal opens up, he falls into it, and he gets like, he goes, you're the hero we've wanted, and we're going to train you. And like I said, in a year, in our Earth time, is a year. But for them, it's like 15, 20 years, something like that. So he's over there, like, he's 26 or 28 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he became the hero, and he comes back to finish his hero duties or whatever and is asked of him. And it's kind of bonkers, because you do find these cool things about how... why is he back and what is he doing and, like, how crazy this thing is. Like, his father never gave up on his busy parts report. Like, the whole thing is, like, it's a very bleak setting for, like, the parents. The parents got divorced. You know, the kid stays with the mom. Yeah. The dad never stopped looking for them. Everybody blamed the dad because they thought they were playing catch. And he went into the woods to go look for the ball and he never came back. They all blamed the dad killed the kid and it never happened. And right. Him coming back, he's like, oh my God, I know you're my son. But he comes back, like, fully decked out in armor. Like, he's got armor on. He's got a sword. He's got, like, 600 other different knives. It's really interesting. And he's trying to, like, link the worlds together or something. It's some bonkers thing that's going on. And you get snippets of his past throughout the comic of things that happened, and as well as, like, things that he's doing for his current mission.
Is it completed?
And it is, like, I want to say it's, I think, like, it's, like, 5 volumes right now. I think it's completed. I only really read the first 2 volumes. But it's really cool. And I think it is completed. Yeah, I have the first 2, so you can get them. Or the first 3, I think. And it's a really cool just story, and how it is. It's not safe for children because there's a lot of blood, a lot of stuff like that. And it's also swearing and stuff like that. It's really well done. I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
It was a really fun read, and it was one of those, like, I got the first volume through this Humble Bundle that I got. I went to the comic book store as soon as I finished it, and I was like, "Do you have volumes 2, 3, and whatever else?" So they were like, "Yeah, we do." And I was like, "Awesome." So I ended up buying it and just reading more. It's a really cool story. It gets really fucked up. It does not go where you think it goes. There's a lot of cool things that happen, and then, like, a lot of twists and turns. It's just a really cool story. I don't want to ruin anything. But yeah. Like I said, the drawings are done really well. I always picture, like, in comics, because it's a big thing for comics, if you can't see it in anime form or in movie form, I think the comic fails for you. Because you want a picture. Like, the same thing with the book. If you can't visualize it, I think the book fails for you also. Yeah. You want to be able to visualize as much as possible. And this does it to a peg. Like, as you're reading and seeing the comics, what's happening, you can put all the in-between on there for you. And it's really wise. I think it's done well.
I like that.
Yeah.
I want to see it. What's it called again?
It's called Birthright.
Birthright. Nice. I will... What company?
Image.
There you go, guys. So you can look it up or find it on in your local comic book store. Check it out. I want to read that for sure. So that's your number 7. My number 7 is a film called Extraordinary Stories, and I'm going to read the description here. In this adventurous experiment in storytelling, secret identities, missing persons, lost treasures, exotic beasts, and desperate criminals are only a few of the elements woven into a grand tapestry of mysteries. This is a film from Argentina. I want to say, I hope I don't fuck that up. I always confuse Argentina and Chile. Yeah, it is Argentina. Thank you. Thank you, IMDb. And this is written and directed by Mariano Llinas, or Llinas. or Yunus, sorry. And it stars a lot of people that, oh my God, their names are not very good here. Mariano Linas, it stars in there. Walter Jacob. Agustin Mildilaharsu. Sorry, I must be native. Raul Aguero. Alberto Ayaca. Diego Alarcón. Sorry. Rodolfo Andreani. A lot of people in this movie. A lot of people. And this is a 3-hour, or 4-hour, sorry, 4-hour epic film where it introduces, it's a film where none of the protagonists really talk. It is three points of view called X, Y, Z. They don't have real names to them. And all of their stories, from what is in their heads to how their lives are or have been or are day to day and what you're watching or what they're like contemplating, are told in narration. One narrator tells the entire story of all these men, and these men have a slew of mysteries that come up suddenly in their lives, and they are connected to each other. The film opens with a strange mystery right off the bat, telling you this is a strange mystery, and it tells you like
when did this movie come out.
Oh, this movie came out in 2008.
Okay, that's a very old thing to do.
Right.
To go like, this is a very strange.
I know.
But it's almost like a Twilight Zone-ish.
It does. They don't say it that way.
Sure. No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. I guess I'm saying it that way. And like the film opens up with this mystery about like this man coming out of in a field, right, where it looks like it could be his field. He could be working that field. And he has a suitcase, right, a black suitcase. Very strange for that man to have that. The point of view of what we're watching is someone that is watching this event going down. And these two men come from a different truck along the way. Maybe they're having a meet. Maybe it's about drugs. And then suddenly a gun comes out. One shoots the other. The other one runs away. We don't know what's going on. The guy who's watching is the whole time that just happened to be there, or was he just happened to be there, steals the briefcase because the guy had hidden it before the guys came in, and that's a mystery right there that gets solved halfway through the movie. And it's that when the description said a tapestry of mysteries, it's not fucking around with you. It's not fucking around. Every story has a lot of interesting points of view and characterization that pulls you in, and yeah, you can't wait to see the next story, like the next time it goes back to that character X. But in between, you have Y and Z, and you can't wait for those to come back after their little stories. And so it goes back and forth like 5 minutes apiece,
Sure, sure, sure.
And it's super interesting. It's the 4 hours did not feel like 4 hours to me.
Really?
Yes. There were maybe one or two points it felt like that a little bit because there's a month.
You have to, especially when you're watching anything.
Your butt hurts from just sitting so long.
Exactly. I just watched the most interesting movie.
Right.
And for me, I'm just like, jeez, how long have I been?
Fascinating movie. It came out of this movie.com, which is like, watched a lot of movies there. Almost all of my discoveries come from that kind of thing. And they had an Argentina marathon of Discovery movies from filmmakers there, and I saw a bunch of them.
That's why you butchered half those names, but yeah.
Yes, why I butchered them. And, I don't know what kind of dialect I should put to them when I read them.
Spanish.
So anyway, well, no, not just Spanish, because a lot of them are like very like,
Portuguese?
Como Indios names. A lot of the names are
in Spanish, dude.
I don't know how to say those either.
Yeah, they're hard as
fuck.
They're hard
as fuck. They have a lot of X's and weird H's. Yeah. Anyway. So that is Extraordinary Stories. I don't know where you can find this movie. I really don't know. I hope you can find it somewhere. It's not on any major streaming site unless you can pay to rent, or you can find a DVD somewhere on Amazon. You can buy it, which would be amazing because it is a treat. It is a hell of a treat to watch. It is.
Look at this.
You glue to the screen.
As you do your travels to Argentina, you probably could get it there.
Yes, it's probably the number one movie. I have no idea.
Probably not.
It's a great movie, though. It's sure. So that's Extraordinary Stories.
I'm pretty sure it's Transformers 3.
It's Transformers 3.
Yes,
sure. To them, it's like, a shitty movie.
Right.
That's my number 7.
My number 6
yes.
is a video game called Hand of Fate. There's a Hand of Fate 2, but I didn't play that one. Or I think it's coming out. It is an action role-playing video game developed by Defiant Development and Defiant. So this came out in 2015, but I played it this year. I've been watching random streamers play the game, and I thought, I was like, oh, this game looks pretty fun. So it's actually really cool. Like I said, action role-playing. So imagine you walked into this fortune teller, like, gypsy kind of thing. You walk into it, and you're like, let me get you your, not your fortune, let me tell you your fortune, but, like, like, see what you choose. Like, this is what you get to fight, whatever, right? Or is that, choose your adventure kind of thing. So she,
they those usually
out,
fail, though.
They lay out a bunch of cards, right? And yeah. you get to pick the path you want to go to. So there's like, oh, there's branches that branch out, or you try to find the exit to find to that gets you to the boss that beats that boss, right? And each level okay. gets harder.
Yeah.
So that's how the game works. And there's 12 bosses all in all. I am the 11th boss, and I cannot beat the 11th boss, even though I've been there 4 times. It's hard. Yeah. Because as each deck, because you have a deck of cards, it's all random. And it's like each deck is depends on what you get, your hands drawn. And you're like an adventurer adventuring into these lands. And each thing is, oh, you landed into a trap. You have to fight more people. And then when the fighting comes, you actually have to control it in the game. So you have to actually fight. It's not just like, oh, it turned out this way.
Hmm.
So it's kind of cool. It does both worlds. It's not the best looking game, but it is a good looking game. And it's like, oh, you have to do this quest, and the quest is all text-based. So, like, you talk to this goblin. The goblin's like, hey, can you have anything for me to eat?
Hmm.
Sure. And it's like, you give him you're like, you could say no. You could say, yeah, half of my rations, which is actual half of your rations that you have to use as you're traveling. And
okay.
it takes one ration per use. Like, it's and like, okay, let's say I gave him half my rations. Oh, okay, cool. He gives you a quest card. So next time you play it, you get this quest card, and you continue these quests as you're going along through your adventure of
yeah.
trying to beat the game, of trying to beat these 12 bosses. It's a really cool thing. And like each quest can get longer and harder. Like, oh, this eventually, like the goblin quest, for example, led me to, like, I helped him, I gave him food. He's like, all right, cool. And the next time I found him in the forest, and then in the forest, he was like, hey, come help me. Like, I found this, I found these this random loot here. Do you want some of it? And she's like, yeah, sure. Oh, cool. Since I gave you this, next time you'll help me out with this other thing. You're like, what the fuck? Okay. And then later on, he's like, hey, by the way, remember I told you you're gonna help me out since you owe me one? Sure. Now we're gonna ransack this guy's treasure room, who he stole my treasure from or whatever. So now you're ransacking this guy's treasure, and there's traps everywhere. You have to play that game part of the traps.
Yeah, right.
It's really cool and really well done, but it's a cool like little story arc thing that you're doing. And it's a really cool game. I'm not doing the justice of explaining it. Everything is randomized, though. Every time you play the game, it's randomized.
Nice.
And you have to choose the path you go on, and you don't know what's going to happen, because each new step is there. And you're trying to just get to the boss and beat it. But you're
also trying to do the Hearthstone's latest expansion with the kobolds. Have you done the dungeon runs in those?
It is kind of like that dungeon stuff.
It's all random.
It is very much like it. What's it called? And everything you do is like you have to make sure you stay alive. Just like in a regular day, or you have to make sure you stay alive, mm-hmm. make sure you're equipped for things. But like I said, as you get further in the game, you're amounting all these new cards that you have unlocked, all these new story arcs. Everything gets harder. But the thing is, you don't get much better. You are around the same. Your equipment's changed throughout the game, but it's all based on what you find. If you find it, you find it. If you right. don't, you're fucked.
And you're fucked.
So it makes a difference. The stacks do get harder.
What's this available for?
It's a PC game. You can play it. You can play it on your Mac, though. I think it's Mac also. So.
I have an old Mac, dude.
It's an old game. It's like playing Hearthstone. It doesn't take much stuff on you.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a fun game, though.
Okay,
it's
cool.
Hand of Fate.
Faith or Fate?
Fate.
Gotcha. So that's your number six.
Six, yeah.
Yeah, we're almost done with our halfway point here. My number six is another film that came out in 2016, one of those that I really tried or wanted to catch up to for that top 10 list for the end of the year. Didn't make it, obviously, so I saw it in 2017, and here it is now. It is a movie called 20th Century Women, which I did talk about in one of those recent.
It was like a super small release, or it was just like.
Yeah, it was one of those indie releases. It didn't make much. I mean, it made a lot of headway critically, but it didn't make it in theaters much.
Yeah.
I just missed it.
And also, I think it came out like during bad times or something like that.
And
like,
I think it came out on VOD after the year ended, I think, or something. I don't remember.
Right, exactly.
But yeah. I really want to see it. And the story is the story of a teenage boy, his mother, and two other women who help raise him among the love and freedom of Southern California in 1979. And this is written and directed by Mike Mills and stars Annette Bening as the boy's mother, Elle Fanning, Greta Gerwig, who is obviously the biggest hero ever right now, Billy Crudup, and Lucas Jade Zuman, who plays Jamie. I think he's the main kid. the star of the film. And yeah. And Mike Mills, yeah.
We see it too. I remember, sorry to interrupt you, but we saw like a trailer for this when it was supposed to come out like in that year. Mm-hmm. And we were like, oh, we're looking forward to this. Like, this would be a bad movie to watch.
Yeah, it looked pretty good, yeah.
It looked pretty good. And yeah. Then it just...
Yeah, it like sputtered somewhere and we didn't see it. This is the guy who directed Beginners and Thumbsucker, two of those movies I've seen. Have you seen him?
Better than ever even heard of.
I think Thumbsucker, it might be on Netflix. I don't know about Beginners. Maybe it is. If it is, everyone should watch it. So apparently this guy directs very personal films. Not to say that every director isn't personal, but this one particularly personal. Beginners is about basically an old aging man who is, well, wife recently dies or something. I remember, it's been a while. He starts, he was always gay, but he never could come out. So he waited for his wife to die when he was like in his 80s. He starts looking for guys in his 80s.
Awesome.
And the movie's called Beginners. And apparently, Mike Mills, you know, did that film a lot with his father as inspiration, like almost not directly, but indirectly too. And 20th Century Women is supposed to be a representation of his mother. So like a lot of how he grew up with his mother. So like that's why it's set in 1979 and it's very personal. So the film reflects that a lot. You can see and feel it, not only in the acting, which is the best thing about this movie. Annette Bening has only gotten better since her American Beauty days for me, which is the first time I saw her in movies. And
yeah.
And The Siege too. The Siege also, not part two. With Denzel Washington, I remember that movie. She plays like a CIA agent.
I'm trying to remember it. I don't think I can.
I don't know why, but I really remember that movie where I haven't seen it since the 90s, but whatever.
I'm thinking of Under Siege, but sure.
Yeah, I know. Everyone should put probably is. And Elle Fanning also was great, and Greta Gerwig was amazing. They're all really good acting, and I'm trying to like help. What is the best way to reach to a boy, like in a way that, you know, when you have three women, and they're all like... independent in their own way, or they all have their own misgivings and purposefulness in life and their own drive, and they have themselves have been in many ways squandered by other men. And how do you raise a better man than what you used to? But also they're women, so how can they relate? And it's not just about those actions necessarily, but the way they contort themselves to this kid and the way they talk to him and they're trying to teach him while being themselves is the most interesting part of this movie. And you can imagine it probably gets really funny. It gets really serious too.
Is this almost a coming of age movie?
Yeah, but it's like through their perspective. So they're like trying to get this kid coming of age. It's not like the kid is coming of age and we're seeing it through all his point of view.
Yeah.
We do see that, but it's like their
involvement. So it's almost like,
involvement.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
It's like a coming of age movie through the parents' perspective. I guess you could say. Yeah. So it's very good. And so it isn't, because I know you've been sick of those lately, Ruff.
I have, but there's a different twist.
It's a different twist for sure. And like I said, it feels super
good
original.
Cast, too.
Good cast, very good cast. So I recommend it. 20th Century Women, my number six.
Yep.
And that is it for our halfway point. We're going to take a quick break. And For a real quick break. Luke here is going to interject here after my clip here I'm going to put in. And he's going to just give out his top five discoveries. And I'm going to let him explain. I haven't heard the audio myself, so hopefully it's fine.
Ooh.
But I did download it. It did come through. I just
haven't. Guys, what you have to come to the realization is that Luke just has better audio when he talks by himself and he has time for himself.
Because right.
I think he just he gets into these things and he doesn't feel like we're eye-rolling at him. Or maybe he's not looking on Facebook or...
when he's by himself, like
playing cookie clicker, he does that all the time when he's here.
Yeah,
and he's showing me and you,
and he's not listening to us anyway.
No, exactly. It's perfect.
It's great. So, and we'll come back after he gives his top five. So, see you in a bit.
Don't speak to me. You have no right to speak to me.
Oh, I do, because you are just like me. You see Jesus in Gethsemane and believe your trial is the same as his. Those five in the pit are suffering too, just like Jesus, but they don't have your pride. They would never compare themselves to Jesus. Do you have the right to make them suffer? I heard the cries of suffering in this same cell, and I acted.
You excuse yourself! You excuse yourself! That is the spirit of darkness!
And what would you do for them? Pray? And get what in return? Only more suffering. A suffering only you can end. Not God.
Away from me.
I pray too, Rodriguez. It doesn't help. Go on. Pray. But pray with your eyes open.
So my number five discovery is going to be The Minimalists. The Minimalists are two guys, Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Fields Milburn. Yeah, Joshua Fields Milburn. And they run the Minimalists.com. Pretty much they are two guys that used to have really good paying corporate career jobs, but throughout their lives just weren't happy with the money that they were making and everything that was going around in their lives. So eventually they both discovered minimalism in different ways. And they pretty much started living a more thoughtful life with a less is more type of mentality. And they pretty much got rid of all of their belongings and just stuck with the basics. And they have a documentary out on Netflix. That's how I first encountered them, called Minimalism, a documentary about the important things. But on top of that, they actually also published three books that I have was able to read. The first book is called Essentials, Essential Essays by the Minimalists. And this is pretty much just a roundup, I believe, of their essays that they have published on their website. And it talks about things from like simple living, decluttering, finances, passion, health, and relationships. Then we have the second book, which was Minimalism, Live a Meaningful Life. That is more of the book about more of what minimalism is to these guys and how, you know, it can impact all the different things in your life. And they kind of focus on things like your health, your relationships, your passions, your growth, and your contribution, and how those five things can essentially not make you a better person, but give you a better way of life. And the third book that they released is Everything That Remains, a memoir by the Minimalists. And this book, I believe, is just their, you know, life experiences that kind of led them down the road to minimalism and things that have impacted them into, you know, finding minimalism. And, you know, it's kind of weird to have a memoir. These guys, I think, are only in, like, in their 30s or mid-30s. But I guess they've kind of accomplished a lot with what they're trying to preach, or, you know, the advice that they're trying to spread to other people. They're really passionate about their minimalism, and they really want to get it across to other people because they do feel like it can help people with a lot of aspects of their lives. That, you know, we're all constantly being, you know, bombarded by advertisements and the compelling thing, you know, to just buy, consume instead of reuse or borrow. They have different ways that, you know, you can get the message from them. I would recommend probably starting with watching the movie that's available on Netflix called Minimalism, a documentary about the important things. Then if you want to go further down the rabbit hole like I did, you can find them at theminimalists.com. And over there they have a podcast. They'll show you like the books that they wrote and things of that nature. But it's pretty impactful. Kind of learn some things from them, especially with me constantly being traveling and living out of a suitcase. I have to kind of learn how to downsize what I can bring with me or ship over to wherever I'm going. So it's kind of a good practice to only bring what I feel is going to be essential. So that is going to be my number five discovery for 2017, The Minimalists. And my number four discovery of 2017 is a movie that literally came out towards the end of 2016 that I just barely missed. And that was called Captain Fantastic. And Captain Fantastic stars Viggo Mortensen, who actually got the nomination for Best Actor for this movie. Unfortunately, he did not win. Viggo's character, Ben Cash. Ben Cash, his wife, and his six kids live in the wilderness. And they are both very liberal activists, and they do not care for, you know, the whole capitalism and the American way of life. That is why they decided to to raise their kids in the wilderness, where their kids are going to learn to forage for food, be physically fit, taught to think for themselves, you know, things of that nature. And, coexist with nature and, you know, guide them through the world without having to use of technology. Unfortunately, when the movie starts off, we learn that the mother is bipolar and she takes her own life while at a hospital. So due to that circumstances, they have to kind of travel to make sure her funeral is done the way she wanted it. And, you know, traveling, I can believe it's cross-country, you know, with a bunch of children that are kind of socially awkward as well as the father. It's going to be kind of interesting. However, it's a really good movie. I cannot recommend it enough. I'm really mad I missed this movie in 2016 because this would have probably made my top 2016 list if I had seen it earlier. And one of the cool things I like about it is the society, or the lack of society that these kids are brought up in, and how well it's worked out for them. Like, there's one scene that I always think of is when Ben Cash, you know, I think he goes to like a relative's house who also has children, and she's kind of braiding him like, your kids need to be in school because they're not learning anything. And he asks for her two kids to come to the kitchen, and he asks both of them, I think they're like in their teens, or maybe like a 10-year-old and one teenager, like what the Bill of Rights is, and they can't even answer it. But then he calls like his like youngest, like a 6-year-old kid, and the kid pretty much verbatim can recite the Bill of Rights, and not only recite it, but give you his own interpretation of what the Bill of Rights means to him or her. I forgot which kid it was. But then that kind of like stumps her, like these kids are actually taken care of properly and they have a proper education. And, you know, obviously it's not all that great. There's going to be some conflicts in the movie. And one of the things is, you know, the children kind of do blame the father for how he dealt with the mother's illness and things of that nature. And, you know, one of the kids feels like they're inequipped to kind of deal with society because they don't know how to interact with the other people around them. So there's some little struggles in there, but, you know, it's a really good comedy/drama film that I'm going to really recommend. And that's going to be my number 4 pick, Captain Fantastic. Alright, and the number 3 pick is something that I once again have to say, fuck you, Oscar, for making me watch this. And those of you who know what that is, it's a movie I had to review earlier in the year, which was Grave of the Fireflies. And as we all know, I've avoided this movie greatly throughout many times. I just did not want to see it because I already knew what the subject matter was. However, thanks to our animation marathon that we did recently, I was forced to watch this. So, Grave of the Fireflies, if you don't remember, it is a 1988 anime film from Studio Ghibli. And it takes place in World War II times in a Japanese town called Kobe. It stars two children, Seita and Setsuo, I believe, and Setsuko. And it's a brother and sister, older brother and little sister. And the premise of the movie is that they lose their mother. Their father's out fighting in the war, and their mother dies due to a bombing. And they're kind of left to fend for themselves after they leave their aunt's house because she becomes a real bitch to them. This is a very powerful anti-war type of film because obviously as soon as you start watching the movie, the first couple of minutes you notice that the older brother, Seita, passes away. And then as you go throughout the whole movie, you know that the little sister is also going to pass away. And it's just a really hard subject matter thing to watch. And if you want to go back and see what my previous rants are about this movie and me, you know, hating Oscar for making me watch this movie, you can go back a couple episodes and I'm sure it'll be in there. Us, all three of us, talking about Grave of the Fireflies. Nonetheless, it is a very impactful movie. I'm glad I saw it. I don't think I'll ever watch this again in my life unless I want to show it to someone else and ruin their lives for the rest of, you know, ruin them. But yeah, there it is. That's my number 3, Grave of the Fireflies. Definitely a tearjerker of a movie and one of the best animated movies I think that can come out because of the subject matter, and it is a perfect thing for the anime medium to portray, because to do a live action movie of this sort would probably not go as well, because A, I hate child actors, And I don't think that they have the capacity to pull off such a very emotional and impactful role as this movie or anime portrays. All right, so that's my number three. One more time, Grave of the Fireflies. Fuck you, Oscar. All right, and my number two is going to be OJ Made in America. Once again, I believe I saw this very early in the year when I was still in Colorado. And thanks to Ralph, he sent me the Blu-ray DVD set because he knew I would enjoy it. He just told me to watch the first part and, you know, I didn't have to go any further than that. However, holy shit, this was amazing. It's one of the best documentaries I've seen in a while, especially because it's a five-part series. It pretty much goes throughout all of OJ's life. And not only does it, you know, show how everything about the murder and the trial and everything that happened, it also does a good way of setting up the social tension in America against things like the Rodney King beatings and everything that was going on. So it kind of gives you a portrait of not only what was going on with OJ and his life, but the social landscape that was happening in America at the same time. And that was one of the most convincing factors as to why I believe he got off as as he was innocent, was because a lot of people thought this is kind of like a payback for the Rodney King thing. Since the cops got off on that, OJ was able to get off on this. I mean, that's just a personal opinion, though. However, it does really go into depth about his life, his career, his connections, and then everything that happens to him after prison, and then how he gets back into prison. It's just crazy what this man has endured. And honestly, for being an ESPN 30 for 30 film, I know those are pretty good. This is one of the most amazing ones I've seen to date. And I've only seen a handful, unlike Ralph, but it is what it is. If you're not even a fan of OJ, because I really wasn't, and I knew very little about him aside from the murder trial, definitely watch the first part of this. And then tell me you're not convinced to watch the second part, and so on and so forth. It's just that damn good. It's just that damn compelling. You want to continue. You want to find out what's going to happen next. And it's seriously like being a part of, you know, watching a part of history that I was a part of. However, I was so young, I didn't even realize what was going on. So yeah, there it is. That was my number two pick. OJ Made in America. All right, and my number one discovery for 2017 is actually a TV show that I've been hearing a lot of acclaim about, I think, in the past 2-3 years. Although I believe it is on, yeah, it is right now, it's on its 8th season. And that show is Shameless. Shameless is originally a UK show that was, I think, only had one season in the UK. And then, as we always do, we rip off their shows and we make them for the American audience. Unfortunately, it didn't work so great with Skins. However, I guess Shameless is a polar opposite since they're going into their 8th season. And I believe there's already talks for a 9th season. Shameless is a American comedy drama television series. It is on Showtime, and it is primarily set in Chicago, or, you know, takes place in Chicago. It follows the dysfunctional family called the Gallaghers. The head of the household is Frank Gallagher, who is a drug addict slash alcoholic, can't hold down a job, just kind of collects unemployment type of character. And he's pretty much a burden on his children. Therefore, he has 6 children. The oldest one being Fiona Gallagher. She's kind of like the head of the household at this point, even though she's only like, I think, in her very early 20s, I believe, at season 1. Followed by the next underneath is going to be Philip, which is called Lip Gallagher. He is the oldest male. He's pretty much like the really smart kid in, you know, the ghetto school. But, you know, he goes on to go to college and all kinds of stuff. Then the slightly younger brother, we have Ian, who at the beginning is just like very hardcore into the military type of person as his career goal. However, he holds the secret that he is actually gay. Underneath that, we have three more kids. We have Debbie Gallagher, who's kind of like this really weird girl. She's trying to kind of like find her place in the world right now, especially because she's in this awkward teenage years. However, I think she becomes more rebellious throughout the years as she grows older, and a lot of stuff happens to her. Then we have Carl Gallagher, who's the second youngest kid. And this kid is just a handful. He's like this total gangster wannabe type of person. Always into things like guns and women, you know, starting all kinds of trouble and shenanigans. And the youngest child is Liam, who's actually a toddler at the beginning of the series. However, in like season 7, he has, I believe he has a much more better role. You kind of start getting to his story. So even though you have this crazy background, these kids are dysfunctional as hell because of the upbringing. You know, they are always struggling to pay the rent. They're trying to pay for the utilities, trying to get food on the table. So they have to do all kinds of things, whether it's take the SAT for other kids, and, you know, pass off as them, or any kind of like shenanigans they can pull off. It's a crazy ride. And every time, you know, there's a high and everyone's doing great, you know, something's going to come around the corner and it's just going to be either self-sabotage or some crazy thing is going to happen to them. And it's going to cause a spiral downwards. And you just kind of think to yourself, like, how the hell are they going to get out of this one? And that's one of the things that makes this show so fucking addictive, is just trying to see where the hell they're going to end up next. Honestly, I think I started watching this show right around the same time season 2 of Stranger Things came out. So I think I saw like 2 or 3 episodes of Shameless, binged through Stranger Things, and all of November and December, any moment I had, I was pretty much just going through this show, and I finished all 7 seasons, I think, right about in late December. And I'm currently catching up on the season 8 season 8 as it's showing right now on Showtime, I believe. So, definitely, I can see why people have been telling me for the last 2 years to watch this show. I'm glad I finally caught on to it, just like I caught on to Breaking Bad towards the very end. Definitely worth the watch. Check it out. It's on Showtime. You can find the first 7 seasons on Netflix. Watch it. It's amazing. And you're going to definitely see why they call this show Shameless, because the people in this show are totally shameless. And yes, I did speak about some of the Gallagher family. I just forgot. There are other characters that are in this. Like, there's a guy named Kevin and his wife Veronica, or girlfriend Veronica. She called her V. They own a bar that is always a frequent staple in the show. You have the Milkovich family, which, some crazy shit goes on with them. I mean, it's just all kinds of crazy characters in this show. Definitely check it out. Gonna quit my rambling and finally get some sleep. Definitely check this out. Shameless on Netflix. Season 8's on Showtime. Probably 1 or 2 more seasons gonna come out after this. Cannot recommend this show enough.
All right, we are back. Boy, Luke, interesting 5. Interesting top 5, bro. Nah, we didn't actually hear it. I do know what the top 5 is, but didn't actually hear it because we're recording this in weird editing times. So I hope it was great. I hope you liked it, guys. Now let's continue with our last 5 here, Ralph. What is your number 5? Discovery of 2017.
5 is a TV show that I knew existed, that I never got into, and so my wife got into it. That is Shameless.
I was about to say, is it Shameless?
Yeah, it's Shameless.
Everyone's rediscovering that show.
So my wife got into it, and she's binged the whole thing. She's caught up to, like, what's out right now.
Damn.
And, yeah, like, she made me record her show. And, nice. Like, it was just... And, like, the first... Which is interesting. So this is a weird top 5 for me, because this is a show. So whatever I missed, because she would just watch without me, because this is her show. She's watching it on her own time.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever I missed, she would catch me up. And so technically I saw this whole show because she would just catch me up everything. Oh, that happened. Like, why are these? I thought they were fighting. No. They're doing this and that, and they reconcile that this guy's got a drug problem. And I was like, all right, you do you. But I'm like, she would just trudge along, so I would have to watch it. So, but I watched it, and actually, it's a really cool show. It's a really good show. It's based from Chicago, so like I knew this was like a popular thing for Chicagoans.
What town are they? What part of the burg? where we're in Chicago? Are they?
They're the South Side.
I know, but where in the South Side?
They're not too far from the medical district. If I'm correct.
Oh, okay.
I think, but they're maybe like a mile or two from the medical district, but they're just further down south.
Okay.
Because if I remember correctly, they weren't that far from there. And it's interesting. I like the storylines. There's always some crazy shit going on. They're fighters, though. They're fucking scrappers.
It's
a really cool show. I like the acting in it, all the kid acting.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's a remake from the British show. But right. I think it's one of those really well done. Because it's a Showtime show. I think Showtime is a thing for Chicago. Because they have a show called The Chi.
Yeah. I almost saw it. But it looked too serious for my liking. Like, I don't want to see it yet.
I've been listening to a lot of NPR,
yeah.
And they had like three interviews, or maybe I just heard the same interviews with the person from who does The Chi.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, okay, they have people have been talking about it, and I was like, I should really watch the show. And I was like, yeah. I think it's heavy but not heavy at the same time. It's just one of those shows.
Okay.
Anyways, she was really it's a kind of fucked up to watch to a lot of the stuff that's going on. But at the same time, like, okay, like you see people's point of view, like what they have to do. Like,
yeah.
Because these are obviously like lower, almost poor people, like almost like super poor, like bottom poor. But they're like lower middle class, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of struggle going on, and what they do to cheat the system or how to work the system, not necessarily cheat it, although yeah. Some of them do cheat the system. It's a lot of really crazy things.
Are you talking about Lip?
Just everybody in general. Yeah. But Lip works, yeah. Everybody works around this. And it's interesting. Like, you see character development. And I got to see this like bonkers thing that's happening. Like seven seasons in 1 year. So like everyone else was watching it when it came out. Some really good acting, though. And I love the father. What's the Gacy guy?
William H. Macy.
Macy.
I hope it's not Gacy.
Not Gacy, yeah. Macy.
That guy's in jail.
Yeah, and I love him because you don't see that from his normal acting. That's not his normal. That's not a normal role for the guy.
Right. You're right.
And I really enjoy it, yeah. Especially the new season where he's acting what his normal role is. He's like straightforward. It's like he's supposed to be like this.
Sure. I've only seen the first three seasons before, like, not that it was bad. I just felt it was all. I felt like I got what I always felt like it was pretty much the same. Like, it won't change. Like, it's going to be antics and just crazy situations. But I basically got everything I needed to get out of them. Maybe one day I'll return to it, but I'm not in any rush. And I saw the first three, as it came out, too, the first three seasons, and I just gave up after that.
Yeah, it's life. It's life.
Yeah, it's cool. That's Shameless on Showtime. Catch up like the whole world is apparently these days. So that's your number five. My number five is a concert documentary, which is very strange for me because I usually, it's just not my bag. Concert docs are not my style. I rarely like them. And this last year I saw two actually from one director. And one of those films made is my number five, which is Stop Making Sense. And it's from 1984, my birth year. And it's directed by, written and directed by Jonathan Demme, the guy who brought us Signs of the Lambs and Philadelphia. He died last year. And that's why I saw this movie, because I realized that, he died last year. And I know that he did do some concert docs. He's done others before. I think Neil Diamond stuff, too. And I've seen some of them. But I've never seen his top ones, you know. And he also did Justin Timberlake and the Tennessee Kids, which is the other one I saw. And very good also. The guy has a good eye, not just for narrative filmmaking, but for fucking concert docs as well. And this is Stop Making Sense is the documentary, concert documentary about the Talking Heads, which is a very famous, very good and eclectic and widespread, surprisingly forward-thinking, even for the 80s, rock group that combine a lot of elements that we probably take for granted today. And I don't know how it was taken back then, but they were huge enough back then. And they're not Bruce Springsteen big, but they were surprisingly bigger than I thought. And it's one of those rock band groups that I never grew up with them or knew about them, but every once in a while we hear their music in a movie, and that's how I know about them. You know about them without knowing about them. And the thing is amazing, and it's shot really well. Like, it opens this concert doc, which is about an hour and change, maybe a bit more. It opens with their lead singer guy, right? He comes up, does, I think, Psycho Killer, one of the songs. You know, he does one of the songs by himself. He's solo. He has wearing a suit, strange thing going on, and he's by himself, big open space, and you could tell there's a lot of elements to the space, too. There are a lot of compartments, there's like a bar thing type area where they hide stuff behind there where people are going to pop out eventually.
Sure.
And when he does a second song, another person comes on stage and does a second song with him, and then the third and the fourth and the fifth, and they go on, and it builds up, and at one point they invite another group all together to do a duo song with them both, with both bands together and on stage, and it's the energy, the frantic energy is amazing. There's some behind the scenes footage of the cameras, you know, on the floor with them. Yeah. It's not just standing from afar. We rarely get any of the crowd. It's all them and all their performance, almost exclusively.
Really?
Yeah, we don't see a lot of reactions.
You hear the reactions.
You hear the reactions, but you don't see them very well.
It's almost impossible to say you're not going to hear the reactions.
Right, it's obviously. And it's amazing. You see all the sweat and the brow and the hard work and the choreography involved with some of the sets as it gets changed and made up. And, you know, he changes outfits too, the main singer guy. So, and I'm not familiar with their names. I'm familiar with the band now, but I'm just familiar with them in this movie. And it's really cool concert doc. It's very creative. It pops. It almost has a story to it without wanting to be one. It's really good. It's surprisingly amazing concert documentary. I never thought I would have a concert documentary on any list of any sort.
Right.
Other than my top worst genres I want to see. So that's it. It's called Stop Making Sense. I don't know where it is, but it's very popular. Among concert docs, it's considered to be like the godfather of concert docs. So, and I understand why now. And it's amazing. It's really good. Everyone should watch it. Even, especially if you like the Talking Heads, of course, but even if you don't like it, you can appreciate the craft as you're watching it too. And it's not bad. It's catchy music. It's good music. So, I recommend that very heavily. That's my number five. And, what is your number four, Ralph?
My number four is a board game, that is not mine, but is in my house for some reason. It is called Sheriff of Nottingham.
I've been wanting to play this game.
So in this, you are you experience Nottingham, and you get to be a rotating sheriff, as every player will be a sheriff at one point. But you are a merchant of the city who is trying to declare their goods as they are bringing into the city, and you are secretly trying to store things or hide things through the sheriff. And the sheriff must determine who gets into the city with their goods, who gets inspected, and who may have their goods confiscated. So basically, it's like a bluff game almost. And it's interesting because, like, obviously you get more points. You have to. It's a point game, but at the end of two rounds or whatever, of two sets of everybody being the sheriff, you get to rack up the points. If you brought in more contraband than you got to sell, you make more money. But you have to bluff the person who's the sheriff. So I'm going to be sheriff at one point. You're going to be sheriff at one point. Mm-hmm. So is the other three people or whatever. It's interesting. Because you have to hide everything, and
I heard about
you. If you fail as a sheriff, you have to pay them because you're like you fucked up. You know, like you have to compensate them.
Okay.
And if you are correct as a sheriff, then you get to reap the rewards of being right. Or maybe you're one of those crooked sheriffs, and you're willing to take a bribe and look aside, and you make an extra buck. That guy makes an extra buck too, you know, as long as you're getting a cut, who cares? And it's interesting, but you could also fake it out. You could also be a man against your who is not a man of his word, and be like, sure, I'll take the money, not a problem, and then still fucking look through their shit, and you take the money anyway because fuck them, that's why, you know. But it's a really...
You're going to be the good cop, the bad cop, or the bad lieutenant cop.
Right, exactly. It's a really cool bad lieutenant cop. I saw that recent movie recently.
The original or the Nicolas Cage one?
Nicolas Cage
one. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's not terrible, though.
No, it wasn't horrible.
It's just a weird movie.
Yeah. And what's it called? It's a really cool bluffing game, and I played it. It was a really fun game to play. Mm. I want to bring this game out more often with friends because it all depends, like, how you want to talk to people.
Right. I want to play this game.
And it's really cool. It was a really fun experience.
I heard a lot of great things about it. Yeah. You know, a lot of podcasters I know will bring it up in there.
I bought it for a friend, and it ended up being at my house because I store board games.
Right, because you're the board game guy here, essentially. And you're Grand Central Station for a lot of your friends. So.
Apparently.
Yes. I don't know where other people live, but I've seen them forever. You know, I've known them for a long time, and they still come here more than I ever go to them or something. So that happens. So that's your number four. What's it called again? Sheriff of Nottingham.
Nottingham.
My number four is a TV show. I think my only one on here. Yes, my only show on here. It is. This is a strange one because I'm changing the rules of how this is going to work out for next year and so on and the future. It's a Netflix show called The OA. Have you seen it?
No.
I just want to catch you.
Sorry, I have disease.
It's okay. The OA, but have you heard of it, right? It was kind of a... Everyone was talking about it for, you know, 2 weeks that it came out or whatever.
It perused my Netflix thing, yes.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So I'm going to read the description here as best as I can. The OA concerns the apparent miraculous return of a young woman who had been missing for 7 years. When she originally disappeared, she was blind, and now her sight has been somehow restored. Plus, now that she has severe scarring on her back, which she will not explain how she got the scars, or she truly does not remember how the scarring happened. When she is first questioned, she not only does not remember her name, but anyone she meets, at least at first. To some people, she is a miracle, and the others, she is dangerous. The truth is frequently never simple or easy. This is a strange written thing here. The OA stars Britt Marling. And Britt Marling, and creator and also writer and director of, I think, all the episodes, Zal Batmanglish, they've done films together for at least 10 years when they first started out. Britt Marling, you've seen her face. You'd be like, oh, I've seen her, and she did The East. Remember that movie, The East, with Ellen Page?
Yes.
She, I think, also co-wrote and directed with this other guy. And she started that movie. She was the FBI agent. And then she did... the Twin Earth movie, I forget the name of it, Another Earth, I think it was called, which I like too, and Sound of My Voice. Have you seen Sound of My Voice yet?
No.
That was like their hit indie movie that made them bigger now, which is a very cool, they always have cool premises and cool ideas and very cool twisty endings to their stories.
Okay.
And like, it's like almost plausible, but not plausible also. That's the whole point of it. And the OA essentially is a half flashback, half current events thing. Okay. About this girl who's been missing, and you want to know. The question and the way it phrases that question about what happened to this girl over the 7 years she was missing is they set it up so well that you really, 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 really want to know. And I will tell you right now, the first season does give you that full explanation to a satisfying degree. It's not going to leave you the biggest cliffhanger, not leaving a cliffhanger in that regard. But what it leaves you cliffhanger is that once you get all the information, I'm not spoiling the ending here, but once you get all this information, how it ends and where the possibilities of such an ending from all the shit that she went through over these 7 years is flabbergasting, interesting, and it could go anywhere. And I like the idea of the time pressure that the show suddenly puts on you. When it looks like it was just taking its time for a long time until you find out, oh shit, there's time pressure on this thing. And it's really cool. And I know I'm skipping around a lot of things.
Sure, but, yeah.
And it's just an interesting, and very original premise of how to get humanity together. Like when certain human beings are forced to endure the same suffering, which is what happens in her flashbacks, because they're held in captivity. She gets her sight back, for fuck's sake, from being blind. And you see the progress of this thing and what they're creating amongst themselves while enduring this suffering under this man who's holding them against their will is super scientific and supernatural at the same time. It's really cool. And I really like it a lot. It's just so much fun to talk about. I wish I had more people to talk to about it. So if you watch it, I want to talk to you about it.
Sure.
Very philosophical too. All the shit that it brings up, very spiritual in many ways. Also, touches of all religions are on this thing in a way.
Okay.
You could tell like a lot of the way they talk about certain things. So that's the OA, and I love the show. It's really great, and it's on Netflix, and it's a Netflix original show. And I think season 2 is due to come out this coming year, 2018. So I will be there first day.
Okay.
So that's my number 4. Your number 3.
My number 3 is another weird one. I got to make this for 2 birthdays this year. And I did it because it was something that I've been meaning to do, something I've been meaning to learn to do. And it's make a Raspberry Pi device, make a RetroPie, it's called. It's like a mini computer, right? And you get to the RetroPie itself is a Linux-based operating system with that gets to play old video games, downloaded video games. So you can download all these videos. I would tell you first, of course, if you own these video games, it is the right thing to, if you can get the digital version of it, but technically you are stealing, so they right. don't offer. Right. But just letting you can all these ROMs and stuff. You know, you just play on your computer, like, oh my God, I can play Nintendo games on my computer. This is amazing.
Right.
This is you make a device, and it has its own, the Raspberry Pi. It's a very small motherboard that has USB-C, USB 3.0. Mm-hmm. USB 2.0. It has HDMI. It has an auxiliary cable.
Okay.
It has all these stuff that you things that you need to go a power supply, obviously, to turn everything on. Using that, using an external memory source like a 64 gig SD card, you use that with the Linux based operating system. You put this program over it that deals with it, and it gets to play like it works like an operating system, like your PS4. All the overlays and everything like that, and it gets to play any ROMs you want and you put on there. Mm-hmm. So for my father, I got it for his birthday, and I got him every NES game, every Super NES game, but a lot of N64,
nice.
Sega CD, Sega Saturn, Dreamcast, got him a bunch of games, and he just plugs and plays. And I got him this cool little case that looks like a small Super Nintendo system. And it's really cool. You turn it on, and it has all the artwork, and it has all the stuff. And you play games whatever you want, and you just plug in a controller and go ahead and play. It's a really cool system.
I sort of heard about this. I still don't really understand it. I'm not a computer guy whatsoever.
I learned how to build one. It's just obviously just following instructions and doing things, but it wasn't hard. It was cool to put everything together. You get all the parts. You have to do everything yourself. Obviously, the motherboard already comes, everything's set up. So you basically, once you run everything, you have to put all the stuff on there. And it was really cool. Like I've been talking about doing this. Me and Luke have been talking about doing this for the longest time. And Luke's been messing around with certain things. And I've watched videos of people making their own Game Boys with an actual Game Boy like case, just modified for that runs a Linux-based operating system with an actual HD screen instead, and not a shitty Game Boy screen. And they're playing on his old classic Game Boy with just updated stuff, updated buttons, updated whatever.
Right.
And you're playing games that would never be able to be played on a Game Boy, and it's an amazing thing. It's really cool. I delved into this weird like upgrading or just like building things for computers. It was a really cool thing to do this year that I did, and I got to do it for my cousin, because once I figured out how to do it, a one-day process that it took me all day to do, for my friend, it took me like 1.5 hours to do for my cousin. Like, later on today, that year.
Right.
It was just like that much easier. I had everything plug and play. Let's do it. Let's go. And it's really cool. Everything's there. The stuff is downloaded. It's a really cool thing to do this year, and it's really fun. I ended up playing a bunch of random ass old games that I've never played, and my friend's like, how have you never played this game? Because like, this game is absolute garbage. But it was a fun experience to do. It was a kind of unique present also to give to a friend. So it was cool. It was a cool experience.
That is really cool. I like that. I kind of want one now. Yeah. I would like a fancy emulator like that.
Yeah.
Or like a one you could build. That's kind of cool. Very cool. Nowadays, because back then it was the height of technology, but now it's like easy. You know, you just got to put the work in.
Sure.
That's really cool. So number three is called what? What am I calling it?
You could put it as a RetroPie.
RetroPie?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you're going to write that to me, right?
Sure.
My number three is The Works of Someone. It is the filmmaking endeavors of Makoto Shinkai, who I got into heavily and never knew the name. That is to say, the man who brought us the most popular, most blockbuster-funded, whatever, hit anime of all time, which is Your Name, came out.
That's right.
Came out in the States in 2017, but it came out in Japan in 2016. They made all the money and then some. It is their Transformers and Titanic and Avatar, right? All combined and shit. So, and it's and we all loved it. And so I loved it so much that I wanted to seek his films out.
Like, his works.
How is there a filmmaker this big and this good that I've never heard of before?
Yeah, he's not his first shot, right?
Right, it's not his first shot.
5 centimeters per second.
Right. So I saw here are the films that I've seen, and some of them I can't find, or I had to pay for like a service to find, and I didn't want to at the time, and I still didn't get to watch it. So I'll be watching his movies as they still go on. But I figure I've seen at least a few of his titles to call it the whole thing. So I've seen he does a lot of shorts, by the way. I've seen other worlds, their starting points, their standing point, sorry. Hiromi Wasaki Egao. Egao, sorry. I saw 5 centimeters per second. I saw Neko no Shukai. So that's 4 or 5. I saw someone's gaze. And those are it. And obviously your name, but I'm not counting your name because that's a 2017 movie. But movies like The Garden of Words, I want to see. Children Who Chase Lost Voices, I heard was amazing. I never seen it. The Place Promise in Our Early Days, also I heard great things. And Voices of a Different Distant Star, didn't get that. I actually did get a copy of that, but the subtitles, I couldn't find adequate subtitles for it, so I couldn't see it.
That's sad.
So these are funny. Like the guy is manages to include a lot of surprising amount of like delicate and detailed humanity into everyday lives of these people that are doing extraordinary things sometimes. Like from, it could be anything, and usually something whimsical or something a little goofy, but like life-affirming goofy. For example, like one of my favorite of his is clearly the shortest, and it's the funniest one. It's Neko no Shukai, which I guess, is there a translation here? No, there isn't a translation on this. A cat sick of having its tail stepped on desires to unleash his anger with the help of other cats. That is the synopsis of this, and it's like literally a few minutes long. And it's 1 minute long, sorry, it's 1 minute long. And it's written and directed by him, of course. And it's just like this beautiful array, like almost like a montage told story of 1 minute about this cat who has a daily routine of being stepped on, also being fed and also being cared for. And it like it's gearing up the other cats really to funny. Attack this town and kill everyone for stepping really on funny. His tail. And then right before he does it, he remembers all the times they pet him and fed him. And he takes it all back like, fine, I'll stick with you guys. And yes, it is a spoiler, but it's also 1 minute long. So it's so marvelously like aloof and witty and funny and just really really light touch animation filmmaking, and it's really good. And it's just an example of what he brings to the table in Your Name and as well as the others here. 5 centimeters per second, also super interesting. A lot of the these kids are those two kids are like highly intelligible kids and intelligent kids who are philosophical in the way they render letters to each other. It's about these kids who separated schools, you know, after bonding over being bullied, and it goes from there, and they kind of have letters back and forth and they miss each other, and it's very very endearing and very tender, and it's very good. Makoto Shinkai is a pretty good guy.
Yeah,
I want to see his films forever.
Yeah, I've seen 5 centimeters per second, and I've almost saw the other one, the Distant Stars one.
Surprisingly, a lot of them are on Vimeo. I found one or two on Vimeo.
Vimeo is interesting. Okay.
YouTube. Yeah. So, yeah.
You could find them free.
There. Yeah, yeah. These are all, they're short films. They're kind of.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
I couldn't really pirate them.
Well, 500, I think it was like an hour, right?
Yeah, an hour long. An hour sure. long. It's like a long, short one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's my number three, the works of Makoto Shinkai. And you're number two, Ralph.
My number two is a podcast, because that's the type of person I am. And it's a podcast that I been meaning to get into, but I never did because it's one of those epic podcasts again. And that is Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. I never listened to it before, and I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm the podcaster guy who listens to, as much as I'm the board game guy, I think I'm the podcast guy as well.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Me too.
And,
I'm so glad you heard
it. I'm so glad I heard it too. I haven't got to listen to his famous Genghis Khan one, or Genghis Khan, or whatever you call him.
He calls it like that.
Yeah, but I, you could buy those, which yeah. I've been meaning to do. I just don't like how they have it set up on iPod or on iPhone, mm-hmm. Where you have to, they're like set up as audiobooks, so they wouldn't go through the podcast app.
Right. It's not the best, but it's I have bought a few of his like that.
Definitely. Yeah, it's just. Yeah, I don't know.
It's inconvenient. It's more inconvenient.
I think I'm
going to
buy them on PC and just make them as audio files and just drag them to my thing. Right. That's going to be interesting, but whatever. But yeah, I do plan on making that purchase. But it's a really cool. I just love how. And I hate that. I think lately we've been doing a better job of portraying history. And I think a lot of great things are being portrayed historical wise. Through like certain PBS publications, like the Vietnam War that we saw some of, mm-hmm. I think even some of the CNN 80s and 70s shows that have been coming out or whatever, those are pretty cool. Also, what's it called? History's being told a different way to get you excited about it, or just to give you the proper knowledge. But for someone like Dan Carlin, what's it called? To just be enthusiastic and. He's not really a historian. He doesn't consider himself a historian, right. At least, right?
Just like, a history
enthusiast.
Fan. A buff, maybe.
Yeah, a buff, I would definitely say. He's just, it's almost like he is begging you to learn this, or like begging you to understand like his aspect. And he's willing to go through the boring, I would say boring texts, because I think when you're reading history, it's portrayed almost clinical, and that's very boring. The clinical things are boring. Sorry to say it.
Yeah, because there are definitely historians that do interpretations of history, and a lot of those are kind of the rock stars of historians. But a true historian, I mean, most 90% or whatever, everything they have to write has to be true. So you can only write it in a true way.
That's true, exactly.
So it takes a lot of the flavor out of drama, maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, but it's interesting when you have him talking about these things and how passionate he is and how he interprets and what he interprets of people's histories and people's takes on histories. He doesn't just give his take. He gives you the example. He gives you the take of this other historian.
A way a historian would make, like another, a way a historian will give their opinion on a historical subject or a person is by what they omit or what they like focus on. Like they could focus on one particular day of that man's
life.
What
I really like about it is I think he's this really great bridge for a lot of these other historians, because he reads the art. He reads both sides, three sides, 800 sides of things, and you're like, you're wrong. Like this should be coinciding with this and this with that, and like you guys have the same things, but they extrapolate it differently, and it's a really cool thing for him to get into it. And I like how he almost gets away from a conversation of like a topic that he's talking about, but he does this great loop of like he brings it back. You're like, dude, you weren't anywhere near for what we were talking about.
You were at 9/11, and you started with World War I.
Right, and you're just, how did you get here?
Right.
But he makes this great loop to bring it all back, and you're just like, I totally get your mind process. And it's great to like just delve into this guy's mind. The fact that it's only like a staff of three people is amazing.
Yeah.
And good for him for being a champion out there.
Yeah,
and just
for sure.
Doing some very, very well work of just putting out these.
You listen to his current events podcast?
I have listened to some of it, yes.
Yeah.
Which is also
he wants like change with a capital C.
Well, I listened to the Holocaust one, which was a really cool episode, a really cool podcast. And it's a really good, really well made show.
Yeah.
And I'm just surprised other people. I know it's a big, very popular podcast. Also, is that?
It always almost makes the top 10 podcasts of
whatever
the year.
He releases new stuff. Yeah. I know that, but at the same time,
record breaking. He released the least amount of any year in 2017.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I've heard. I also heard he's a little bit depressed. So like,
the events of stuff.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
But it's closer to ourselves than most of us are.
Right, exactly. But he's doing a service to the people, and it's a service that's provided for free that anybody should be taking advantage of.
Yeah, totally.
It's just a great. I really enjoyed the podcast.
You can easily get down a rabbit hole. You could just spend like weeks listening. Because he's like 3 hour podcast.
You really can, and it gives you an appreciation of the topic he's talking to you about.
Sure.
And you get to learn something that you normally wouldn't want. You would like to know, but hearing it from somebody and giving not only his perspective or bridging perspectives and bridging historical actual facts, and not just reading it in a book and feeling bored, I think it's a great job.
How I know it's the mark of a good podcast or a historical podcast is when I was listening to his shows and I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait. I want to remember everything he's saying. I know I never will, but I want to remember all the facts.
You really do.
I want to remember like how he put this in terms of how Genghis Khan's troops shot their bow and arrow, you know?
Yeah.
The steppe people and shit. And then sometimes I'll surprise myself like, oh my, I did, I bought that out. I remember that part. And other times, like, I forgot that entire chapter. Like,
I totally messed up one time and I let my podcast go out or something, and I was like for an hour, and I was like, oh, I have not, I don't know where I was,
right?
So I rewinded like too far back, and I was like, did I hear this? And I was hearing it, and I was like,
and you get to a part like,
this.
Oh yeah,
and I was like, wait, this all is familiar, but now I remember it again, and I'm just like, oh, it's really great,
a lot of information. So that's your number two, Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, right?
Yes,
okay, cool. My number two is a film that came out in 2016. Another thing that I'm going to reconcile in future Discoveries episodes. I know I've been saying that twice now. I'm going to explain myself right after this. It's a film called Silence, which is directed by Martin Scorsese, written by Jay Cox, and Jay Cox, Martin Scorsese, based on the novel by Shusaku Endo. And it's a hardcore fucking story. I'm going to read the description here as best as I can. Let's see which is the best one here. The first one's fine. Yeah. This is a story of two Catholic missionaries who face the ultimate test of faith when they travel to Japan in search of their missing mentor at a time when Catholicism was outlawed and their presence was forbidden. And 17th century, no joke. It's, 1600. So, like, it's a fucked up time. It's one of the worst. Like, anytime when there's no plumbing, I don't want to be in that world.
What's very interesting about it is that you're like sick. No one talks about the 17th century.
Very few. Very rarely.
It's like very little information about it.
But World War II, though, we got that covered.
Right.
Exactly. 1930s, 40s.
It's about recency bias.
Right. It is kind of recency bias. This film stars Andrew Garfield, Adam Driver, Liam Neeson, Tadanobu Asano, Karen Hines, Issei Ogata, Shinji Tsukamoto, and Yoshi Oida. I want to mention him for sure. So this is a great cast, even though they're supposed to be playing Latin American or Latino missionaries, by the way. Rodriguez, Garupe, Ferreira.
I think from Spain, no?
From Spain. Spanish. One of them is from actual South. I don't remember. Maybe not. But Italy or Spain. But yeah. Either way, they don't look fucking Spanish or Italian. So maybe Adam Driver looks a little Italian.
Maybe a little bit.
Right. But either way, they just certainly don't speak it. It's full on English.
Sure.
Anyway, the point is besides that little flake, Scorsese directs a film that I felt must be one of his, if not his most personal film to date. And I know that's a bold statement because a lot of his films are very personal, from his, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which I know is based on a play or something. But his first movie, Don't Go Knock, Look Who's Knocking at My Door or whatever. Yeah, he's done some very personal stuff.
What's my understanding is this is a passion project for sure.
It's a passion project. It costs a lot of money. A lot of people saw it.
it's a book, right? It's from a book?
It's from a book.
And this is a movie he's been trying to make for a long time.
A long time. And I can understand why. It's hard to sell for a lot of financiers. I can sell. And it's a hard thing. The film does not present any levity either. It's just trying its best, and it, I think, succeeds in such a great way to show you what it means to have faith and what it means to have it tested in every sense of those words. Tested, not like saying, like, answer these questions and if you get it. No, motherfucker. You see people suffer and die in front of you. You yourself are suffering and dying in order for you to believe this thing.
Right.
And it's horrifying because it pits the audience in a sense. I think what Martin Scorsese, I feel like he feels throughout his life, experiencing his tribulations with how he feels about Catholicism. I mean, you see that, what's that movie he made, in the 90s with, Willem Dafoe? He plays Jesus Christ, The Last Temptation of Christ. Have you seen that film?
I know.
I feel like that movie and this one are very good pairings for obvious reasons. So, that one's The Last Temptation of Christ is not based on the Bible. It's based on some other book. I forget. So it's all off the top of my head. But it's a rendition about he's injecting humanity into Jesus Christ in a way that no Catholicism class is actually teaching. So the idea of what was that last intention is like this thing is like another facet of what he faces and what he's struggling. Scorsese, I'm talking about, in terms of religion and how it's seen and how he sees it and how he feels unworthy and yet worthy enough to question these morals and these people that experience this kind of thing. And I think this is a perfect book for him to adapt because, he's never really been a writer much. He's always been just a director, face off.
Yeah.
Sometimes producer. And I think he found a material that best fit his struggle as he gets older and older now. And I think this is a great follow-up to whatever the fuck last movie you did. So, yeah, it's a great fucking movie. We both saw it, I think, in theaters at the same time.
I really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, so good. It was in that ether realm for us. Like
this is a movie that makes you, like, I don't know. It forces
question
you to
a lot of things.
It forces you to take a deep look.
Yeah, it does.
And if it doesn't do that for you, I'm sad.
Yeah, because you. I mean, it's.
And I think you're, I think
there's no one word answer. Is no one is one, not one person is to blame for everything.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you come out of this saying like, clearly the Japanese were crazy, then you got, you missed it. You missed it. If you say the priest is all the fault, no, you missed it again. You can't just say it's not absolutes like that. It's different than that.
Yeah.
And then it's just so good.
Yeah. I liked it. I 100% agree.
It's hard to watch though. I may watch this movie one more time in my life, and that's it.
Yeah, no, it is hard to watch, for sure. It's hard to, it is really hard to watch.
A lot of suffering.
It is, yeah.
A lot of death. So that is Silence. And what I was saying before about how we're going to change this rule thing, this and the OA had the misfortune of being movies that came out. Silence is the movie that came out in January, like mid-January, here in the States. I mean, here in Chicago. And they made it to L.A. and New York, I think, or just L.A. right before the end of the year to make it, you know, contend for the Oscars, right? To be the, you know. So it was counting as a 2016 movie.
2016,
but it didn't really come out until 2017. So I didn't know where to put it. From now on, when this happens, like with Phantom Thread, as I said earlier to you, Ralph, I'm going to include that as a 2018 movie. Because it came out here in 2018. It just did. It was unavailable for me other than that time. I'm not going to travel to LA to watch a movie. It's impossible. I'm counting as 2018, even though everyone's considering it's 2017. I'm just going to make that ruling now. I think you agreed when I said it. Yeah. Same thing with the OA. So the OA came out very late in December of 2016. So I couldn't count it. I couldn't have time to watch 8-10 episodes of something before I had to make my top 10 TV shows. That's just why Instant Discoveries. But I'm not going to do it anymore. If it comes out the 20th or later, I'm counting it. If it's before that, I'm not.
Right.
So I'm just going to put that in there because I know for a long time, Mozart in the Jungle kept coming on the last week of the year.
Christmas or something.
Right. And I was like, oh, bro, you're killing me because I love that show. We both love that show. But it's hard to put it in a list if it's if we can't watch it.
Right, exactly.
In time. So I'm going to make that. But this is the last time you'll see movies and shows like this on my list for Discoveries if they come out so late in the year. But that is my number two, Silence. It's not anywhere for you to stream for free or for a subscription, but you can buy it and rent it anytime you want. It's on Blu-ray. I might get the Blu-ray one day. I might pitch it and get it and watch it again. So, Ralph, what is your number one? Last one.
My number one is a movie that came out in 1967, starring some known actors, Alan Arkin. What's it called?
What year?
67.
Okay. Alan Arkin. Oh. The blind lady one, right?
Audrey Hepburn.
Audrey Hepburn, yes. She plays a blind woman. Oh, so good. I love this movie.
This movie's called Wait Until Dark.
Yes.
So, this isn't a normal Audrey Hepburn movie, or why you watch. Audrey Hepburn is a very, what's it called? Almost like eye candy, I would say, right? She's a good actress. What am I saying? Like,
yeah, no, I'm with you. You know, she's Hollywood used actresses differently than we do today.
Yes, I 100% agree with you. Yes, and but I think this movie brings out her actual acting roles, her acting, her like what she can do. And this is a recently blinded woman is terrorized by a trio of thugs while they do a search for a heroin stuffed doll they believe is in her apartment. Super interesting to watch. Alan Arkin plays a bad guy, a very young Alan Arkin.
Oh my god, very young. Like, he's younger than us today.
Yeah, and, yeah, exactly. And it's
done. And I grew up with him being old.
Exactly. Yeah, me too. And I've never met a young Alan Arkin until this.
Right.
And I got to watch this on TCM, the Turner Classic Movies. And it was an Audrey Hepburn marathon. It was like, fuck it, I'll watch some stuff. I mean, it's just a fucking phenomenal movie to watch her act. And she's like blind. They set up this whole thing. And she's basically at the confines of her apartment. That's mm-hmm. where the most of the movie takes place. And these guys are trying to get this package, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously playing along with, like, you know, not letting her on, but at the same time trying to look for this while being in the apartment. And it's just, I don't know, it's really well done, and all the conflict that happens and how Audrey Hepburn has to try to figure out that she knows she's there. There's, you know, there something is amiss or something is wrong, and having to like place things together that she's not a blind, she hasn't been a blind woman her whole life. Right. She's, like I said, she's recently blind, just like maybe like a year or two in or something like that. So she's still learning a lot of things, and her having to pick up on things like, I didn't leave the refrigerator door open. I didn't, you know, like doing certain things and having to come to the realization that, oh, like someone is like this person that's in this house is looking for things, and it just like I don't know, it was just so well done.
Yeah,
I had such joy watching this movie, and then finding out that Audrey Hepburn spent time with actual blind people.
Yeah, she actually blinded herself. Taught them how to do more. No, that'd be awful.
No, she learned from them how like to pick up on things that they did and mannerisms, and it was a very interesting movie to watch. And it's something that's not super normal, but I think it's probably one of her best works, just acting wise. I know it's not Breakfast at Tiffany's, but fuck, man, it's a really good movie.
I agree with you. I saw this a long time ago. I wish I'd seen it for the first time this year, so it could be my list too because it's an amazing movie. And I haven't seen it since that time, and it's in my mind, it's grown better, and I can't almost wait to rewatch it and now as a more fully fledged adult.
Yeah.
I want to see it again, for sure, but I'm kind of saving. It's almost like a treat I want to save. But I want to see that movie again, for sure. Wait Until Dark, which you can find somewhere to rent. Because I don't think it's on streaming anywhere. But if you find it on streaming, let me know about that.
Amazon iTunes.
Nice. That's your number one. Very interesting number one. I love your number one. It's a great movie. I love when we agree on that. My number one is a series of novels.
Cheater. That was just good.
Well, yeah, maybe. It's the Dark Tower series.
Oh, okay.
By Stephen King. I'm going to read the opening I like. I like the opening of the Wikipedia summary of this thing.
Okay.
So I'm going to read this real quick. The Dark Tower is a series of 8 books written by American author Stephen King that incorporates themes of multiple genres, including, but not exclusive to, dark fantasy, science fiction, fantasy, horror, and western. It describes a gunslinger in his quest towards a tower, the nature of which is both physical and metaphorical. The series and its use of the Dark Tower expands upon the Stephen King's multiverse, and in doing so links together many of his other novels, including like Salem's Lot, Ruff, if you know that one, and Hearts in Atlantis. Like, a lot of those are connected. They have connecting characters and people that kind of meet up with each other. King has described the series as his magnum opus. In addition to the 8 novels, the series comprises 4,250 pages, many of which King's other books relate to the story, including concepts and characters. And the stories are as follows, although a lot of them are very strange and come on different times.
Okay.
Little Sister Oluria, The Gunslinger, which is the actual first one, The Drawing of the Three, The Wastelands, The Wizard in Glass, The Wind Through the Keyhole, Wolves of the Kala, Song of Susanna, amazing Song of Susanna, and The Dark Tower, the finale. And I've...
You've read all of them?
I read all of them. I finished
this year?
Yeah,
bro.
Yeah, all of them since minute one. And I started following a podcast that has been updating. They do one major chapter because he breaks down the chapters and acts. And they do one major chapter per podcast episode. I overshadow them a long time ago. They're way behind, actually. But anyway, I did it just to, you know, catch up, you know, to know what their ideas are. Because I like podcasts that relate to what I'm doing. This is a great series, and I've read other series too, and a lot of them made my honorable mentions list, which I'll get to soon. But this is a great thing. When I said it mixes those genres, it mixes them so well that you, before you know it, you find yourself like saying, like, the genre isn't these genres anymore. It is life told extraordinarily, and oh, okay. And it gets meta in many points. Meta to the point where, like, it feels like a Charlie Kaufman thing, only not funny, you know, like for laughs. It's for seriousness, and it brings a gravitas and a weight to their actions, to these characters' actions, you know, which is Roland, Jake, Eddie, and Susanna. And these guys are the quartet, and you start thinking in the way they start thinking. And you start, like... You start calling yourself the Cotshead. You start saying all these things, like for the face, you know, for your father's, you know, sake or whatever. You know, that some of the, you know, isms that they have. It's really easy for you to incorporate them and copy them, and in their adventures. And their adventures are plenty. That, you know, you could fight a gigantic werebeast, mechanical bear thing. You could time travel to the 40s and stop a certain accident to happening before some, which will create a rift of things, whatever. There are parallel universes in this thing. There is vampires that suck energy as opposed to actual blood. It's amazing. And you think, like, no way this can all come together, but it really does. And obviously, 8 books get a lot of time to give, yeah, bring it all together. It. And it's so good. And a lot of this stuff is not just on face value. A lot of it is metaphorical, too.
What's the time span of these books from when to when?
He started... Okay, yeah, that's a very, very good question. Because he incorporates how... Because he took a time off in between a certain part of it.
Sure.
And he incorporates that in the finale of his series. His time off's time. Like, he incorporates that into the story. He started in 1982. Ooh. He finished it in 2004.
Okay.
That's when he finished it finally. So he stopped. His last one, and the big stopping point was 1997. He stopped, and then I don't know if you remember, but Stephen King had a horrible accident that almost killed him—a vehicular accident in 1999. He had to recover from a long time after that. And when he came out of recovery, his first thing he wanted to do was finish the series, and that's when he started. He did the last four after that. One of them being The Wind Through the Keyhole is actually one of those in-between books that he wrote after the actual ending. So it's one of the, you know, writers like doing that. I don't know why. I haven't read that one, actually, but I read the main story.
I think it's because they felt that it was unfinished.
Right. It wasn't unfinished. And I read the synopsis of that particular book, and it just talks more about Roland's history and stuff, which I'll get to, but it's not the main story, so I don't have to read it.
Sure, yeah.
And he actually incorporates the reasons as to, like, in a way that's I can see how people can see it as narcissistic and egomaniacal. I don't. I see it as a creative, inventive way to give your books more reasons to be read, I feel. And I love the creativity and the ingenuity of how he includes himself into his own series.
Yeah, I've learned that about him.
Yes, and it's very, very cool. This is the biggest way he's ever done it compared to his other books like The Stand or whatever. So I would love to tell you off air about it because I really don't want to spoil those kind of things. If you have not read these books, and some of them are definitely long. None of them are short, but they're very interesting. They're very cool, and I don't know how you cannot love these characters. Super cool. I don't even know where to begin to really talk about in detail. But the Dark Tower
series. Stephen King's definitely a treasure for the United States.
Yeah, he's very cool.
I think he's like, he's gonna, once he passes, I wouldn't say maybe a decade after he passes, you maybe even earlier, you're going to hear about how he's probably one of the best writers of his time.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, not only does he churn out, because he could churn out books. Like,
it turns out like nothing.
I mean, just look at the adaptations of his work.
I mean, this is 2017 is the year of Stephen King adaptations.
Yeah.
Like, 8 movies came out from his works.
Right. And that's just like
Gerald's Game,
And that's maybe like a 16th of the amount of books he's pulled up.
Right.
And like, that's saying a lot of things because, like, I don't know. I think Stephen King's, I mean, we take it for granted because he pulls out so many things, but man, that guy could work. That guy just could tell a story.
Yeah, definitely. He can. And I don't think he's really bad at his sex scenes, but other than that, he writes everything pretty much.
Hey, Ben.
A star.
Some of us can't have sex all the time.
Exactly. So that's my number one. And that is our top 10 discoveries of 2017. Honorable mentions, Ralph, do you have any of those?
That's kind of hard to do honorable mentions. Of life, yeah.
Well, kind of.
But yeah, I guess I could pull out some stuff. Some stuff that I scratched out, I guess. I had another board game on there, Joking Hazard. It was based on the Cyanide and Happiness. What's it called?
Based on what?
You never heard of the Cyanide and Happiness comics? It's like a web series.
Maybe I do.
They do like also like shows. It's like fucked up shit that happens.
I'm sure I've seen it. I just don't know the name.
The game Joking Hazard, we played it at our Christmas party. With the images, you have to pick the images how they go.
Yes, I think I remember now. So yeah, you're right. Okay.
Another one is streaming service, Amazon Music's Unlimited. It's a little bit different than other streaming services. They include lyrics built in most of their music.
Nice.
What's it called? Yeah, another kind of streaming thing, which is the comboed Movies Anywhere.
Okay.
You ever heard of that?
No.
It's Disney Movies, Disney Rewards or whatever, Disney Movies, along with like 6 other companies. They pull other stuff together along with like Ultraviolet and digital copies. So you could basically, once you redeem it through them or anywhere, like you get to watch it. Oh, it's on iTunes. You have an Amazon account. It's on your Amazon account also. Mm-hmm. You have a fucking Roku. It's on your Roku shit also. Right. So it's like you don't just get it on one platform. Not strictly iTunes.
Right.
They want it on every platform.
That's nice.
So, yeah.
I mean, someone's got to organize that shit.
Yeah, exactly. So, right. And it takes someone like Disney who already had an established thing and everybody else who's kind of like failing or whatever. Like,
well, I think they might change the shape of our globe into the castle, the Magic Castle.
Probably, yeah.
That's how much money they have. Yeah. That's cool. Anything else? Oh, you want me to try?
No, I had some other like random TV shows, kids shows.
I have some strange films here. I'm going to try to write along.
But go ahead. But...
So I have, let's see. I read the first four novels of, I don't know how long the series is, but I know there's at least four more of the Harry Bosch novels. Because, you know, I was into the show a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I read the first four books. Very good books. They definitely, some of them get better. But they're basically, I think I got the best out of them. I never heard that the ninth book is the best or anything like that. So,
sure.
Because they're all like case by case. And it's funny how they tweaked from the show. Obviously, they tweak it. You know, some of them is more subtle. Some of the stuff that's more dramatic in the show isn't nearly as dramatic in the books. They go a lot more into his Vietnam history, which is really cool. How he brings it into his life. And he doesn't have a kid or anything like that, or an ex-wife. That's very interesting. Yeah, it's very good. So Harry Bosch almost made it. Thomas Harris, I read all of the Hannibal Lecter books. All the ones that involve him, anyway. It's from Red Dragon to the, I think, just Hannibal, right? So I read his books. Pretty good. Not great enough. It's very interesting stuff, though. I like the creation of Hannibal Lecter as in general. Homecoming. Have you heard of this podcast?
No.
It has a voice actor, well, real actors doing voices of, they're all real actors. Like David Schwimmer's in it. Catherine Keener plays the biggest role. And they have, it's like a story about government. It's like a sci-fi government conspiracy type of story where they meddled with Iraqi soldiers in certain ways that made them defective in other ways or extra in some other ways. And it's about this woman trying to rectify a lot of her problems when she used to work there. It's an interesting podcast. They have season two came out this last year. I saw this movie called Sadako versus Hideko. Have you seen that movie yet?
No.
About the it's like Freddy versus Jason, but for Japan. It's a movie where they combine they make the Ring Girl and the Grudge Kid fight each other.
Oh, that's funny.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Oh, it's so good. It's on Shudder, which I have. You should watch it. It's super cool. Because it's basically, the movie is two horror movies. They both start off as two horror movies. You know, one enters a house where they shouldn't be. One watches the tape when they shouldn't be. And they figure out that, hey, both of these curses are nearby each other. We should combine them, make them fight each other off, so hopefully they don't kill the victims. And that's what they fucking do. And it's fucking badass. And it's really cool. So watch that. I recommend that. I saw Grand Illusion for the first time, which is a, oh my God, Jean Reno? No, Jean Renoir. I don't remember who. Some, you know, one of those classic French cinema movies that I liked, but I don't know if it's just me being new age, but it didn't really stay with me
sure.
A whole lot. I saw a very creepy movie called Creepy, which is a South Korean film. Tricked, which is Paul Verhoeven did a short film in his native land of Sweden or Norway, I forget. And that was a pretty good movie. Irma Vep, I saw Wet Woman in the Wild. She's Lost Control. These are all like titles of movies that are really hard to find or whatever, but pretty good. And yeah, those are my discoveries. And I don't want to say disappointments because that's stupid. Life can't be disappointing, can it?
Nope.
Taxes are disappointing.
Not bad.
Have to pay. No, that we have to.
Oh,
pay
refunds. Taxes. Oh yeah, for sure.
No, refunds are fun.
Refunds. Are fun.
Yeah, my refunds fun. I don't have a real good exit, so that's it. That's it for our show. You can send feedback always to podmoviecast@gmail.com if you want to give us your interpretation of your best discoveries or what's a good way to put some of these rules together here and there. But you can find me if you want to follow my movie watching habits on Letterboxd as well as Twitter on Armin Filmmaker, which is Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ralph, where can people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter @GaberRalph. That is with two R's and an F.
And stay with us for our last top 10 films of the year of 2017 is coming out next week. Until then, I am Oscar.
Ralph.
See you later.